Ladies and gentlemen, the World Wide Web proudly presents... Recorded live in Chicagoland, USA.
Why does everybody forget about Hobo Joe?
A new episode of the podcast, Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. With your hosts, Luke Ski and Carrie Dalby.
Everything's a song.
I guess there's further lyrics. You just can't go wrong. I seriously don't know the rest of the lyrics.
Oh, you would have to look on that.
Hi! Welcome to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport!
I'm Carrie.
And I'm Luke.
And this is episode number 54, December 12th, 2011.
And we have a cast of thousands! Yay!
Maybe thousands of pounds.
Oh!
Hey-o.
Oh, well.
So, let's...
Should we introduce our guests?
Sure, I guess so. We'll start with those of us who are physically in the room with us.
Yay.
What's your name?
What's your name and claim to fame, sir?
I am Mr. Tuesday. I do a show on Dementia Radio and stuff on Monday nights, which I should be doing now, but I'm not because I'm on a podcast.
Yay! And you're also Commissioner of Dementia SmackDown Wrestling.
Yes.
What's your name and claim to fame?
Well, I'm the Madman on the Loose. I do a radio show on Thursday evenings on Dementia Radio, 7 p.m. Central Time. Claim to fame? I don't know.
Your claim to fame is that sometimes we call you because you're Ken.
That's right. I am the less called Ken. Duh.
Every once in a while, every now and again, ring, hello, let's call Ken. Ding!
And that's who's it. That guy? What's your claim to fame?
God.
What's your name and claim to fame?
I'm Josh, and I'm married into the dementia community, but I'm marrying Carrie.
Mr. Carey.
There you go.
Mr. Carey Dalby.
And somewhere in the house, hiding from her husband, is Sarah Trice.
Yay!
Hi, Sarah Trice.
Sarah Fortimes.
Aww. She got an adorable Christmas card from her parents. Awesome. They are dressed as Santa and Mrs. Claus.
Indeed, they are.
Well,
don't you know, Sarah?
Hey, that's how you get a snowblower. You be your father-in-law is Santa Claus. All right, so starting with the guy in Michigan, introduce yourself.
What's your name and claim to fame? Mew! Are you with us?
What happened to Blasted?
Where's Blasted Mew?
Where in the hell is Mew?
Hello? 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 Can you hear me now?
What's your name and claim to fame?
I don't know what happened there. I'm Black Bill, and I'm the fucking owner of Dementia Radio.
Yay!
Chicago. All right, the guy in Wisconsin, go!
I am Breakman Z, host of the Power Hours on Friday nights on Dementia Radio, 9 p.m. Central, until I feel like shutting the fuck up. And currently my claim to fame is hosting Breakman Z's video advent calendar.
Yay! Where can we watch this advent calendar at?
You can watch the advent calendar at www.youtube.com/BMZAdvent.
Word.
Yay.
And the guy in the Great White North, go.
It's Sean here, and my claim to fame is I'm just a fanboy.
Yay!
Take off, eh?
And last but not least, sir, what is your name, and what is your preferred princess
Well, why didn't you say his location?
Because he's Mr. Hollywood LA guy. He doesn't need me to
You're
plug
jealous.
In.
Jealous.
Folks, my name is TV's Kyle from the Californias. I draw the things and then I sing the other things.
Television's Kyle.
Yes.
For the sake of argument.
Thank you, Television's Kyle.
Awesome. So everyone is here because in a little while we are going to do the wrap-up from episode 43 when I talked with... Josh and Carrie for about a half hour about my old Iowa Teenage Comedian comics, and then we got the whole international system of mailing comics back and forth so that everyone can actually read these comments and send their comics to Kyle so that you can all tell me how bad they are.
Comics go at the end
live
of the show.
Here on the show. But first we have to do our usual segment called
yes.
What's New in Carrie's Life? Carrie?
My dad visited me on Thanksgiving, and we went to Ann's Sather for Thanksgiving meal, and it was delicious. And, then we watched Kick-Ass on DVD, And my dad just kind of sat there with his arms folded the whole time. And we looked at him, and he's like, I completely fucking hated it.
That was awesome.
Whoa.
And then he proceeded to be the person to introduce me to the Sarah Silverman program. Oh.
So he hated Kick-Ass.
He thought it was disgusting, but he loves the Sarah Silverman program.
Because it's disgusting.
I'm so confused right now.
Yes, and Sarah Silverman program is me and Josh's favorite new show, and it's, well, it's not new, it's like off the air, but it's new to us, and it's like the funniest fucking thing ever.
Oh, it is fantastic.
You're too quiet, honey. And
she never says this to me at home, by the way. I never get to Josh, you're too quiet.
Trust me, he doesn't. And Josh and I attended 2 weeks worth of a childbirth prep class.
Ooh,
did you know that babies come from women?
Oh, really?
Wow.
I did, because I also just took that class.
Oh.
Wink.
Oh!
And did you know women come from Venus? I learned that in a book.
Oh, okay.
You know, chicken soup comes from the soul.
Ah!
So are you making an announcement, Kyle, or making
Yes,
a joke?
I'm pregnant.
Hey!
I was wondering if we were going to get anything like that, considering what a sausage fest this show is.
Oh. Kyle, I warned you to stay away from those strange animators.
Who does that exclude?
You know, they only want to dip their ink into your inkwell.
No, I don't understand your double entendre. It needs to be explained to me.
Okay,
I think it was a single entendre.
So back to me.
Why?
It
might have been just an entendre. I'm not even sure the draft was there.
Shut up. As far as I know, I have possibly up to 3 upcoming baby showers. Probably going to get one from the work folks, most likely. They always do it a quote-unquote surprise. Sarah, Luke's wife, is throwing me the main one, and then Sasha at church choir is throwing me a church choir one.
Wow.
So,
Sarah Luke's wife.
So I have to stop buying baby things because now people are going to buy them for me. Who's trying to call in?
Yes, I did see the thing you sent me. I'll point it out.
Okay, cool.
Later.
Oh, and that's all I wrote down, so therefore that's all that could have possibly happened in my life since the last episode. What's new in Luke's life?
Well, let me see the noty notes. I have seen the Muppets 4 times as of right now.
4 times?
Yes. 4 times?
Can you Lukey, 4 times?
Yes. Because the reason why I saw it a 4th time, besides, of course, I was going to, was that I ended up doing a cameo appearance on the Scope podcast, doing my review with Shane and Adam of the film The Muppets, which lasted about 20 minutes. So that was cool of them to let me be involved on the Scope as one of their reviewers. Jared Ringgold on the show gave me some really nice compliments about the Muppets episode. He said that he wasn't sure if he was going to listen to it. Or listen to the whole thing, but that particular day he didn't have much to listen to, so he started listening, and he said he got engrossed in it and thought it was really, you know, interesting and stuff. So I'm appreciative for him for his compliments and the fact that he listened to it. So,
and then a couple days ago I had a dream about Jim Henson moved into my house. And he wasn't dead.
Zombie Jim Henson.
No.
Zombie Jim Henson.
He just hadn't died, because it was a dream.
It's not easy being undead. Yeah.
I think Green's one.
Hello, everybody. I just want to eat your brains. Yay!
You go in there to open the shower and there's Kermit there. Good morning.
And there's Mozzie Bear, the Waka-ing dead. Did you guys see the cartoon I did of that?
Yes.
Did you miss that? Okay, I'll show
it. Put in the show notes.
So, yeah, Thanksgiving happened. Me and Sarah went to my... visit my mom and my family, and then went to my uncle's house, ate dinner over there, and then went to see the Muppets. That was the 3rd viewing of the Muppets, was with my mom, and during the middle of the Rainbow Connection, my mom held my hand.
Aww.
Wait, didn't you two dance to that song at your wedding?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, you were moved.
No, I wasn't.
Shut up! Can you recite the movie by heart right now?
You are crying.
I admit, I cried at that scene. I was not afraid to admit that and put that on the podcast.
That was the only time I cried at Luke and Sarah's wedding, was when Luke and his mom danced to the Rainbow Connection.
Aww.
And Josh cried during, like, pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I always cry at weddings.
So do I, honey.
And I had a rather interesting day. I'm not fully prepared for this episode or for other projects I've been working on feverishly.
Woo!
Because I thought I was going to have a bunch of downtime at Ed DeBevick's, where I draw caricatures on Saturday, because lately it's been really spotty. I had at least two instances of going to Key Lime Cove recently where I made $0 out there.
Oof.
And one where I made $12. So I brought a bunch of projects. I'm like, okay, I'll get a bunch of stuff done. I'll start with the commission artwork I need to do for Danny and Kim for their Christmas card, and then I'll move on to preparing for the podcast and et cetera, other projects. But instead, on Saturday, I ended up breaking my my record for the most amount of money made in one day at Ed DeBevick's. I made $617.
Big money!
So that
Luke, you're my best friend now.
That breaks my old record by at least $100, and I was, you know, shocked. It was basically, I was supposed to go to Key Lime Cove that night, and I basically ended up being like, I can't leave. It's too much money. By the time I got a break even to call them to let them know I wasn't coming out, it was like 9:30 when I was supposed to have been there at 9. So I stayed. I got there at 11 a.m. and I stayed until 11 p.m.
You had momentum.
So yeah. So that's why I'm not fully prepared for this podcast and other things.
I prepared it for us.
Yes, Carrie
it's
did.
It's all prepared.
Carrie did preparation, and she even wrote news of the stupid this week.
Shut up. You weren't supposed to tell them that.
Let it in public.
All right. Well, we're going to throw in a song break here with the first song dedicated to Carrie, and this will be our Christmas music set for the episode. So, yeah, because I don't think we're going to have another episode before Christmas. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so here is Christmas music. Yay.
Feliz Navidad.
It's so chic to be pregnant at Christmas. I feel like the round yon virgin of yore. 'Cause though I have a warm bed to sleep in, there's no room for me when I go to the store. 'Cause the aisles are so narrow and crowded. Christmas shopping has never been such a pain. Oops, here comes another Braxton Hicks contraction. And I'm knocking over knickknacks again. Oh, the sales clerks are so friendly this Christmas. One said,
oh, God, lady, don't have it here.
Their discretion and manners go right out the door when I am my stomach up here. People like to put their hands on my fundus, and they want to know exactly when I'm due. I say, why do you care? Are you planning to be there? I could use an extra labor coach or two. I am such fun at a party, trying hard to get high on life, desperately avoiding the smokers, being introduced to someone's little wife.
Not so little wife.
I enjoy being pregnant at Christmas, though my identity is draining away. And if I ever get asked my opinion again, I'll simply smile and continue to crochet. It's so biblical to be pregnant at Christmas, no matter what stories you believe. And I may suffer from Gravitz and heartburn and nausea and charley horses and overwhelming fatigue and frequent micturition of varicose veins and swollen ankles and shortness of breath and that tired, achy feeling in the groin. But I won't be alone on New Year's Eve.
Thank you. try again, but make him happy. Please make my boy happy. If you can.
Strange lights appear in the skies all over the world. The wife of a carpenter experiences virgin birth, and a baby is born with a head that glows like a fluorescent lamp. Dare I ask it? Yes. Was the infant Jesus neither man nor God, but merely one of the countless aliens that visit the Earth each and every day? The answer? Yes, definitely. Take that and shove it up the tube marked certainty, in the fuzzy place called the Twilight Zone.
We specifically told people not to be funny during the break, so...
they specifically disobeyed.
The triumphant return of Lady Surround Sound.
All right, so we should probably just dive right in and get this whole thing started. And before
Kyle's running it,
but,
right?
Yeah, but before I pass over the reins to Kyle, I wanted to point out that after we got this... This whole plan in motion, I took all six of these comics and I said, you know what, I need to reread these myself and take notes on them. So when Sarah and I went to St. Louis to visit her brother, while I was, you know, having various times where I could just sitting in the waiting room, I forced myself to read them, and I definitely at certain points needed to force myself to get through some of this stuff because I had to like stop and take like breaks from like, God, this is so corny, this is so embarrassing, and then I had to be like, okay, get through it, go, and I tried to read a few more pages, you know. It wasn't like that for everything, but for some of it, definitely it was that bad. So I took a whole bunch of notes. Guess what,
Luke? I want you to know it's the exact same way for me reading my old high school comics.
So I took a bunch of notes in a notebook. Guess which notebook that was?
Oh!
So the notes I took, I don't have. So, and I didn't
they
have
were stolen.
Yes. I don't have time to redo it now, but so I'll just have to see if any of those thoughts come back to me naturally as we do this discussion. So, Kyle, you are a professional in the animation industry out there in Hollywood. I was so very curious to find out your opinion of this work because I went into college thinking, I'm going to turn this into the next Simpsons or the next Tiny Toon Adventures or the next whatever, you know, so that I could launch a career in an empire like, you know, Matt Groening or Matt and Trey or Seth MacFarlane or whatever, you know, insert, you know, creator name here. So, yeah, I appreciate you leading this discussion and I'm bracing myself for the onslaught of attacks that you are all going to lunge at me.
But as Josh always says, anybody trying to be the next blank is setting themselves up for failure. You don't want to be the next blah. You have to be the new thing.
Be the first Luke Ski, don't be the next Max Rainer.
Yeah. Okay, Kyle.
And we'll get into that, but I want to save my opinions for last because, you know, I kind of am the guy who's closest to knowing how that works. So I figured, you know, I'd go through the notes that Sean and Bill sent me because that's who sent me notes. And then I'd get into what I thought because what I wrote is a little bit more, you know, about moving forward rather than just my reaction to it. Although some of it's my reaction to it. And so I'll go through Sean's notes first. I haven't necessarily read these all the way through before I'm reading them now. So... if I stumble, I apologize. I know Sean made at least one observation that I wanted to talk about as well. But okay, so now, Luke, do you want to run through what each of these six books are as I'm doing this?
Brief synopsis, you mean?
If you think that would make sense to do so, then yeah, we can do that.
I think it would help the audience to know what the hell we're talking about.
Right. So yeah, for those of you who need a recap from episode 43 or somehow, you know, joined this podcast feed after episode 43, back in my junior high school / high school / college days, I did a comic book series. Carrie just kicked me. I did a comic book series called I Was a Teenage Comedian, and the characters from this were loosely based on friends of mine that I went to school with.
Or in some cases, not so loosely.
Yeah. Initially, when I very first started, it was essentially me trying to draw my friends. As I continued to draw the comic over the years, the characters started to take on, you know, kind of a personalities of their own beyond, you know, being drawings of my friends. And especially once I got into college, I was trying to, you know, invent their own universe so that, like, I had a Springfield, USA, so to speak, that they all lived in, so that I could start building up in my mind the Bible of what the show would be in case I ever wanted to pitch it to a TV, you know, TV network or whatever to try to get a, you know, half-hour show on television of a cartoon based on this. And the overall premise it ended up being was sort of an anti-90210, where instead of it being about all these popular kids from high school who were rich, snobby, douchey jock types or whatever, it would be about, you know, a bunch of, you know, kind of weirder, geekier kind of people, with the main character being a character who's known in the comic as Luke Ski or the Great Luke Ski, which is where my stage name came from, was this comic, because I was trying to think of an alternate universe name for myself for this comic character who wears a bizarre hat and glasses and, you know, is trying to make a living as a stand-up comedian while also being a high schooler. And, you know, he has a group of friends that he hangs out with, one of which is a 11-inch tall mutated fly named Kamikaze, who is kind of the, you know, token mascot of the series, but I tried to make him not so cutesy and tokeny as most of those characters tend to be. Have I summed that up overall pretty well, do you think? Let's say yes and move on.
Yes, sure, why not?
So the first major thing I did besides doing individual strips was the first two issues of the six we're talking about was a parody of the Star Wars trilogy, which I did back in, I think it was 88 or 89 is when I made these. It was an 125-page story. I broke it into two books later on when I tried to copy these up to sell to people through my fanzine. So it was called Star Sores, I Was a Teenage Jedi, with Luke Skywalker as the main character and all the other characters from my comic being adapted to be like characters from Star Wars, much like the Muppet Babies did, and then everybody ripped off later. So, yeah, I'm proud to be the first person who ripped off the Muppet Babies.
Now, Luke, one and two, were these drawn in 89 or were these part of the redraw later?
No, the main artwork you saw that was the story was all, you know, done in like 89, 90, something like that.
How old would that have made you?
Actually, give me, where's...
Math.
74.
Well, actually, because I think I have the date written here.
They are in the books.
So, Luke, you do have the books back now.
Yes. Okay. Sean was able to get them back to me.
Good, because that'll make this discussion go a lot easier.
So, okay, I started working on it November 13th, 1989. I finished it on December 17th, 1990. So that means I would have been 15 or 16.
15.
So, yeah, 15 years old. 124-page parody of Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, that's a lot of dedication for a 15-year-old. But I'm going to stop interjecting with my opinions since those come later and start off with Sean's notes. Okay, it looks like there are some specific notes for book one and then some general notes. So book one, Sean asks, to all present, was I the only one who didn't get that Otten Ray was Pig Latin at least until Stahl Vader ordered it destroyed? And Luke, was that joke really planned 9 pages in advance?
That That joke was planned very much in advance, and it was meant to be a reference to Young Frankenstein. I hope people picked up on that no. The phrase, oh. Ixnay on the Ottenray, that's what Igor says, you know, his brain is rotten, I tell you, rotten! Ixnay on the Ottenray. That was always one of my favorite lines from Young Frankenstein. Like I remember my dad cracking up every time that line was said. So my replacement planet for Alderaan was Ottenray. So I
never even got that. So that was take Latin.
In fact, I always thought that if I did redraw the comic like I did, I wanted to like take a break from the story to like have, you know, somebody with a trophy come out and give the award for the, you know, longest, most pointless setup to a joke, you know, ever, and then like give it to Stealth Vader and then he would kill him or something. So, yeah.
I feel much better.
It's not just you.
Yes.
By the way, I love reading the names for this stuff. After the gang leaves the potassium Vulcan on the Death Star, there is a black silhouetted figure standing below the ship. Who is it? Just a random stormtrooper? Scud? Continuity error? Let's all pause while Lukey four times flips to the page.
They leave the Death Star. Wait, okay, read this thing again.
After the gang leaves the potassium Vulcan on the Death Star, yo, there is a black silhouetted figure standing below the ship. Who is it?
He's still looking.
Okay. All right.
Want me to find that while you answer another question?
I don't... Oh, that, okay, I see what you're talking about. That's just meant to be some trooper or whatever. Just, you know. It's so insignificant I don't remember drawing it there, but, you know. We can say it's the special edition and it's a special effect added by George Lucas later.
Okay. Now, Luke, this is a question that's interesting to me as well. I might expand on it a little before I have you answer. Sean asks, and now we're into general questions. He asks, how did your tools change when you put together the second half of the set? I noticed a lot more black regions that today I would imagine the average artist would paint out with a computer rather than by hand. But even in 97, that wasn't so easy to accomplish. How did you do the coloring? And so, you know, my question to expand on this was, did you, you know, I'd imagine the first, you know, the Star Wars parodies were done on regular copy size paper. I imagine as you went on, because the artwork looked a little less crammed, that you were doing it sort of the way comic book artists really do it, where they draw it on much larger paper and shrink it down. Tell us how your process changed as you went on.
Well, the Star Wars, first two books that were Star Wars, I actually drew on graph paper because my dad,
wow.
My dad told me that, well, the light blue lines are, you know, non-photo blue, so if I can use that to help lay out the grid of, you know, that's my dad had a very logical brain, so he gave me a whole bunch of, you know, free graph paper he got from work, so every so often...
Wow, those graphs didn't show up at all. That's kind of amazing, you know. Even with non-photo blue, I usually have it show up a little. It didn't show up at all there.
Yeah, but there's some points I could, like, point to, like, well, here, do you see it there? And it'll become obvious, but... But yeah, that was one of my biggest flaws in my early days of drawing comics, is that I never thought to myself that I should shade in things or that I should, you know, fill areas in with black. I probably, when I redid the book later, went in and probably added some, you know, just by hand when I was making the new photocopy templates, just because I could see after having done some more work, like, oh, wow, there's really... not much here. I guess maybe in my own mind, I always envisioned it in color, like a cartoon, so I'm like, well, I don't need to shade anything in because I see it in my mind in color, which is a dumb way to think. So yeah, I never got any of those, like, stipulation dots or anything like that. But as I got more experience... Oh, the thing I was inking with was a Rapidiograph art pen, like those old pens where you had to, like, fill the India ink cartridge inside the pen and then screw it together and then, you know, hope that the pen didn't randomly decide to blurt a bunch of ink all over your page for no reason. Did you ever have to use those?
Making files? Very in line with a distant memory.
Yes, because my mom got me, like, this, like, plastic case, you know, thing of, like, six different pens. It's like, here's... here's 0.1 centimeters, here's 0.3 centimeters, here's 0.5 centimeters, so, you know...
Breathe air, not soda.
I had to I had to keep, switching pens to try to vary, line widths, which didn't really make a lot of sense, or I don't know if it really came through in my art at all. So yeah, I pretty much stuck with one pen size, because I like keeping a consistent line, like the look of most animated cartoons and stuff. But once I got to late high school, beginning of college, I started using those same Rapidiograph pens, but I started drawing them on glossy paper. And I actually didn't go with the oversized paper and shrink them down. I just stuck with the 8.5x11 because that's what I was used to using. I knew that professionals, use 11x17 size sheets, and then they have that shrunk down to the proper comic size.
Oh, wow. You didn't shrink down any of these?
No.
Wow.
Those are all...
Wow.
Well, certain individual things might have been drawn bigger and then shrunken down, but generally speaking, I just did them all, in that size. So I think towards the end, I may have abandoned the Rapidiograph ink pens and just used like a thin, a fine line Sharpie instead on the glossy paper. I also remember because, our family didn't have a lot of money, and in my mind, it didn't really seem to make much of a difference. I would sometimes do artwork on that glossy paper, and then I would have a kind of fishing art tackle box full of Crayola markers, and then I would ink things and then color them in with the Crayola markers, because using the Crayola marker on the glossy paper with those nice thick black lines, it looked like a cartoon.
Really, it didn't just smear all over the place?
No, I mean, or at least the type of paper I was using didn't. If I was careful and I just let it dry, it would look really cool. And I remember once I even did a piece of for my own personal enjoyment, some fan art of the cast of Captain N and the Game Master. I think I threw Mario and Link in that collage as well. But
is there recognition in your face?
Captain N is the video game cartoon that like Dark NES from the Gothicals. It kind of based their whole the whole corporealization device and the whole notion of having the Nintendo belt buckle handle thing is from that.
Okay.
And check season 2 for Frank Welker as a Game Boy.
Oh God! Don't mention Game Boy.
That was like so dumb.
Why did you have to bring him up, Kyle?
But the only
because he's the Orbity of Captain N.
Just watch the crossover with Zelda. That's all you need to watch.
Quick side note. Robot Chicken actually did a parody of the cartoon, or not a parody, just like one of their little things for Rubik the Magic Cube. Remember I told you about that?
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
They actually did a bit with Rubik the Cube on Robot Chicken. I'm like, oh, cool. Somebody else remembered it.
That screen remembers it, apparently. Yes.
Anyway, so let's move on with more things.
Do you know the Rubik theme was done by Menudo?
Oh, God. Wow.
So what else does Sean ask, or do you ask?
Okay, well, Sean's next question we actually just covered, so I'll move on to his third general question. I recall that you said you took inspiration from real-life people you know. I've heard that Lynn Johnston, for better or worse, drew a lot of her initial inspiration from her own family, but had to diverge as her kids got older and no longer wanted their home life to be showing up in Daily Comics 2 weeks later. Have you had any feedback from those individuals on how their alter egos have been portrayed? Has there ever been any backlash or hurt feelings?
Not really, just because,
get them to read it?
No, I shared it with... when I was in high school, friends would be like, oh, let me see the comic you're working on. So while I was still in school and they were all there immediately in front of me,
they probably all wanted to read it because they were all portrayed.
Yeah. I just realized there's something I need to print up on the printer. So when next break, remind me that I need to print something.
Somebody in this room do it.
So, okay. They all dug it and they all liked it. And, once I moved on to my college life, that was when, obviously, I had less and less contact with these people. I think by about 1994, I remember the last time I had a conversation with Nancy on the telephone was right after I had seen Forrest Gump for the first time. So it was kind of like, Jason and Trisha were still, part of my everyday life. They were living with me in Kansas City. They got married and had a son, Marty. So they were always around, but the rest of them kind of, I haven't heard from some of them in many years until, Facebook came along, and now I have touched base with a few of them, but at this point, I'd be more interested in, you know, if I was going to show them something cool that I've been working on, I'd rather show them the music, because none of them know about any of that. So, you
so,
know.
So, which one was the Jabba the Hutt parody?
Jula the Slut.
Jula the
Her
Slut?
Her name was Julie.
So she didn't say anything about that?
Actually, I think Julie... At some point, either in late junior high school or early high school, I think her family, like, moved away, so she wasn't really around, so she probably never saw it.
Okay.
You know, and not that I was trying to be insulting to her. Okay, as a kid, I probably was at least a little bit insulting to her. But
don't take this the wrong way.
But since the real Julie was out of the picture, it kind of freed me up to do whatever I wanted with her, and I made her into a character that suited... what I felt was better for the comic instead of what she was like in real life.
Did you get to the point where, you know, you weren't actually thinking of them as, you know, the friends they were based on and just as characters on their own? Because I got to that point with some characters that were based on friends, and now, you know, I'm still using them, and I, you know, they have nothing to do with those people anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I basically pretty much got to that point by the time I... You know, I finished the Star Wars comic in 1990. I drew that, you know, origin story thing in... Oh, it's right here. When did I draw this one? 91 to 92. So yeah, by 1992, I had gotten to the point where I'm like, I need to develop this into, you know, something that can, you know, potentially I can have a future with that isn't, you know, constrained by, oh, I need to keep this character like this because this person I knew in high school acted a certain way. You know, I even considered changing the names of all the characters or spelling them differently just so that I could, you know, differentiate if you know, to make sure that nobody ever came back and, like, sued me or something, you know. But, you know, that was me thinking way more than I needed to.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, if you're listening to this podcast, because nothing ever became of it, except for this conversation right now. So.
Sean's final question before a few comments from him. Are you contemplating actively doing cartooning again? I assume he means making comics because I'm pretty sure you cartoon a lot.
I've been thinking of... I know that at this stage it's pretty easy. I know it costs money, but it's pretty easy to put together a collection of things that you can, like, send off to a printing company in Canada and make, you know, a comic book. You know, X hundred number of copies and get them shipped back to you, and then you can go sell them at cons. So the thought has crossed my mind of trying to put together something that I could, you know, print up and take with me so I have yet more merchandise to sell at convention tables. But what exactly I want to do with that, I don't know. I like the idea of maybe doing a webcomic. I like the idea of maybe trying to do more of a story thing. I also like the idea of just taking a bunch of random artwork I've done and putting it in a collection saying, here's a bunch of artwork I've done, you know, issue one or whatever. So, I don't know. It's like, I haven't exactly narrowed down what I want to do with it, but I'd like to do something. So,
actually, I want to talk to you about that sort of thing after I finish what I'm going to talk about. But, you know, bookmark there.
Okay.
Okay, so now Sean's comments. I'm going to feed Luke's ego a little. Pause for dramatic effect. I see a big improvement in the quality of both the drawing and writing from the beginning to the end of the series. By book four, the characters have taken their final form, and you're able to do more challenging plots with them. I'll draw a parallel to Charles Schulz's Peanut strip, where a reader from the 1960s to the present would never recognize the strip from the early 1950s as being related. And actually, I'm currently reading through Bloom County. It would be a similar thing. There was an entirely different cast of characters they ended with than when they started.
Yeah, Bloom County was a huge, Bloom County and Outland and, I guess by the time Opus came out, I wasn't really doing them anymore. But I was that was such a huge inspiration for me. I remember once.
Me too.
Just to give you a brief side story. While I was still in high school, I wrote like kind of a personal journal entry kind of thing, but I wrote it in character as the Luke Ski character from the comic, and I showed it to my friend Jonas, the real Jonas, who was kind of Christian-y, and his response to me having written that was like, it scares me. like he thought there was something seriously mentally wrong with me, and I'm like, no, dude, it's like Steve Dallas doing the foreword in this book. It's like me writing in character as this, and I think that cooled him out a little bit, but yeah, it was like, I don't know, it was weird. Anyway, go on with your thing.
Okay, Sean says, I'll also note that the teaser panels at the end of several of the books made me wish that they had been created and published.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did have some ideas. I actually, the Batman thing, because that was right when that was new. That was when Batman the Animated Series first came out in 92, and I'm like, this is such a cool show, I want to parody this. I was going to have Trisha be Harley Quinn, but I was going to have her named... Harley House, just so in another Ottenray type of setup, I wanted the Joker to introduce her as the eclectic Harley House, and then she would say, of love! Which is a reference to a Green Jello song. So. Electric! Harley House!
You were really going out of your way to be the Dennis Miller of comics, man.
Make Jock Stacy look like that Colin Hanks there.
Okay,
Anna
Sean's final note.
The Jolly Green Giant. Okay, now I'm being an asshole.
Sean's final note. Okay, no productions.
No.
Given that 4 out of the 6 books have references to it, and I don't think it's ever been discussed on this podcast, what's the story behind Gnome Productions? And, of course, also the gnome that shows up in a few of the issues.
Yes.
Hee-hee, Hawaii.
Yes. Bill Putz probably heard the story. Actually, you probably know because you read the fanzines back in the day.
Bill Putz
was like the original Lukeski fan. He gets major props. Me and my friends, you know, inside jokes in high school, you know, it's basically a secret language code that helps you survive the bullshit of high school. So, you know, of course, people pass notes back and forth to each other, and me and Jonas used to do that all the time, where it's like, we either write or draw something to try to make the other laugh, like, you know, willingly participating in each other's potential downfall, you know, during health class because we were so freaking bored, or whatever. So, this one day, he passed me a piece of paper, and we have a history teacher named Mr. Lynch. And he was a really nice guy. And he wrote on the piece of paper, Mr. Lynch turns into a gnome on Wednesdays. So my response to that was to draw a picture of Mr. Lynch as a gnome in front of a chalkboard with a pointer talking about, you know, something like, you know. And then I believe I put him with a word balloon saying, hee hee hoo hoo, oh my. And then I passed it back to him. And then that cracked him up, and then we showed it to all our friends, and then this was junior year of high school. We started referring to Wednesday as Gnome Day, because that's the day Mr. Lynch turns into a gnome. So we would just greet each other on Wednesday at school, Happy Gnome Day, and we wouldn't tell people what it meant until they, you know, like, what the hell does that mean? Like, okay, well, it means this. So eventually Mr. Lynch, like, you know, caught wind of this, and he's a great guy, so he thought it was kind of funny. So I think it was like final day of the year on junior year of school, me and my friends got together and we pooled our money. We made a bunch of t-shirts with the image of the gnome's head on it that said Happy Gnome Day, and we all wore them to school. And I think we even made one for Mr. Lynch and gave it to him. So over that summer, me and Trisha were in the Wisconsin Dells and hanging out, and suddenly an epiphany came to me. I should start a newsletter that I could make on the, I forgot what type of Apple computer it was, where they had what was that program called? It was just called Print or something like that? I don't know. There was a program, an art program that I knew I could use to manipulate images so I could make like a fake little newsletter on 8.5 by 11 paper. And I called it the Gnome News, GNOMEGNEWS. So it was a monthly thing. I was going to put it out once a month and just basically have it be full of inside jokes. And issue one, you know, main headline was, you know, history teacher is actually magical creature. And I kind of wrote this whole story of the supposed myth of Mr. Lynch turning into a gnome. So I made that. I made about 20 photocopies of it, handed it around to my friends. They all thought it was hilarious. So you know, then next month comes along, issue two, and, you know, suddenly there's like 40 people asking me for it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, I had my dad make more photocopies of it. So basically, over the course of the entire school year, I essentially, you know, single-handedly wrote and produced, like, this awesome underground newspaper at my high school that was more popular than the school paper by the time the school year ended. And in fact, I even wrote some kind of controversial stories in some of them because I just felt like expressing myself as an obnoxious teenager. Like, they had us kids were skipping school a lot. So they had this anti-skipping school slogan that was, "Miss school, miss out." And I wrote a whole article about how that, I said it was miss school, miss out, is missing the point. And I kind of wrote seriously about what I thought about that slogan. Later on in the year, I did a whole expose on snobs because the school paper asked me if I wanted to write something for them. I don't know if they were just scared of the competition or what, but the teacher, you know, said, "Oh, why don't you write this piece?" So I wrote this huge piece about snobism, and one part of it was very fluffy, just kind of like, well, here's indications that you might be a snob. Do you, you know, sit in the center tables in lunch class? Do you do this and that? And some of it was very jokey. It was basically a Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a redneck thing, but it was about snobs, but that was years before Jeff Foxworthy was known to me. So that got printed in the real school paper, and it caused a huge-ass uproar. So I'm like, oh, that caused an uproar? When do you read the rest of the article that didn't get printed? So, yeah, anyway, I know this is, like, way tangenting off of the Teenage Comedian stuff, but the gnome became such a part of the mythos of everything I was doing then that I had to work it into the Teenage Comedian comic, you know, that, you know, Mr. Gnome, Mr. Lynch the Gnome was there. And then when I went to college and started a fanzine, I called it Gnome Improvement, and you know, made it a much more in-depth thing, and it started to be more about the funny music career, and that's why when I started making albums, I called the company Gnome Productions, and every so often I'll actually use the Gnome Head logo on something.
And you have a song called Gnome Productions.
Yes. On one of the rarities, I did a parody of the song, the rap song Self-Destruction, called Gnome Productions, where I had all of the original people involved with Gnome Productions do various, you know, rap verses. I'll send it to you on MP3.
You should put it in the episode. It's relevant.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I know it's horrible, but it's relevant.
So you know what? Luke,
this entire episode is about your embarrassing childhood. Okay, just put it in the episode.
Yeah. All right.
Do it. I'll
put a break in now and play the song now so that I can stop recording and print up that thing I want to print up. So here is the song from the original Gnome Productions crew. Bill's heard it.
I'm on it.
Bill's on it. Oh yeah,
he's on it.
Here's the song Gnome Productions. Oh, by the great Luke Ski and the Gnome Productions crew.
We all agree tonight. All of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
Gnome Productions. We're working for Gnome Productions. Gnome Productions, we're working for Gnome Productions.
Well, today's topic, Gnome Productions. It ain't about lawns, underpants, or dungeons. Our motto is sunny, make it damn funny, and if at all possible, make a little money. Logo is Mr. Lynch. For the great Luke Ski, that's me, it's a cinch. I've done it all from sketches, improv, comic books, fanzine CDs of dementia, to stand-up comedy. Hey, remember Psycho Popery? You do meet the family.
Shop, hip-hop, edit, stop, who's to blame? Studio Not a Master Dance, the name. I laid down the track so Luke can bust a rhyme. If I could only get him to pay the bill on time.
Spam Maniac, known as Zach, it's a snack. Meal for surreal. Rocky Horror Picture Show, Dirty Bastard. I am the psychodrama good fella. Sacrificing virgins every weekend. Yeah, I'll make you laugh when I play Riff Raff. Own every CD by the ICP. And I'm jamming on the stage with Great Luke Ski down at
Gnome Productions. We're waiting for Gnome Productions.
I drank two
no productions. We're waiting for no productions. No productions. We're waiting for no productions. No productions. We're waiting for no productions.
Funky Fresh cruising the town of my LeBaron. It's me, Miss Trisha. I see some chicks staring at my man Styles. That does it. Time to die. bleach blonde slit roadkill pie. Luke's best friend since my new kid's days. Now baby Marty is my latest craze. Queen of the castle at gnome headquarters. I love my guys, so I keep things in order. I do the housekeeping, I trim the shrubs, I clean the tubs and make the food my hub grubs. In a puppet show with me and my scrubs, I'm Woody Da, yubs, yubs, yubs.
Straight from the brain of Mike and Brody too.
Be mundane,
do the normal thing,
it's not for you. Cause if you stay boring, you'll be a dull kid.
So why not build robots and sing like Sinatra did?
Conquer the universe.
If you've got the guts,
see Orlando
and watch him kiss squirrel nuts.
Two things left before we end our rap.
Stay away from my rights.
I came here to shoot crap.
It's time to video some more Red TV. God damn it, man. Camera on me. Hey, we're back. Thanks to Jack. Rock and roll Ray is here to save the day. All our bits, sketches and skits are near expensive, way offensive. Luke's mom's always scared of me due to my excessive vulgarity. Suck it. Go see car school filmoramas, ninja demon pro wrestling dramas. Soon Hollywood will feel the commotion. I smell an ass whipping approaching. Goosh!
No productions. Worry for no productions.
All kind of productions.
Worry for no productions.
We're done with
no productions. Worry for no productions. No productions, worry
about
no productions.
I'm Mr. JT and I'm cutting and scratching. You never felt the wrath of my DJ action. I loop in the Muppets, sample Michael Jackson. 9-inch nails, now you're in traction. The new gnome sound is one you'll like, and I'll knock Corey off his big bike. So you best prepare for the flavor I'm mixing, like a snake that's slick like Tricky Dick Nixon.
My name's Jay Styles, I'm about to rock the party. But first, let's have a solo for Marty.
Gump. Dandelion.
Swing. I'm just smoking and joking, provoking a guy named Richard from Hoboken. He claims that the arcade game that he's playing is broken. Here's a token, dick. I chill at night with Trish, my wife, but at work I daydream of a pro wrestling life. You want a match on the mat with me?
Ring.
You think you won till I bash your knee?
Sting.
Power bomb. Ref counts three.
Ding.
I stand on your chest and shout, smoke weed, Milwaukee!
No productions, worry for no productions.
My name is Brandon, the one the girls enjoy. I am known as the fanboy. See the ladies swoon as I dance at the Clayzel in gold underpants. I might be a lackey among the geeks, but I'm the leader of the South to lead the freaks. You'll get terminated by my creeps if you ever make fun of my Jeeps.
Ayo, fictionalization, kamikaze, a fly boy who's funny and fuzzy like Fozzie, confused but still amused, then feels sated. It's a comic book as I have illustrated. Teenage comedians, the title of bat, so come meet Luke's piece alter ego in the funky hat. Stars Nancy Jarrett and the rest do the click thing, and they find high school life quite sickening. So then we all bug out to break up the monotony, pop culture references that sometimes lead to parody. And someday, if we're lucky, then we'll be seen animated on your TV screen.
Name is Bill Bossanovo, Bill will be exact. Let me give you a tour of my den of slack. Here's a beret and some comics and a marmoset and a Playboy and an old lard cassette. I could go on like this all day or show my nipple and squirm around on the floor. Play my face all day because you know it rocks. It's even better than treatment and shock.
No productions.
Yeah,
no productions. No productions. Worry
about no productions. Once upon a time, Jack Styles and Ray called upon the power.
Yeah, the A-Man!
Gave them power to stop Bootsy Bob from conquering the world.
Boy, he's so pretty here!
Luxures and psychos, T-Rexes and puppets are
son
all
of Cyril
TV. If angry and pastries well.
Slow down in the Lord Zone, yeah!
CD put out by
no productions. Worry about no productions. Hey. No productions, we're working for no productions. No productions, we're working for no productions. No productions, we're working for no productions.
Okay, cool.
No productions, working for no productions.
Yeah.
How much would I love to hear an overhead school announcement that the talent show has been canceled due to lack of talent?
So now that we've heard all of Sean's comments, have we heard all of Sean's comments?
We have.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Did Sean want to say anything or?
And we're recording again, by the way.
Or
hi, folks.
Or was
on another one's spot?
Was the whole point of sending Kyle notes so that Kyle could speak for us?
Oh, I'm fine with that.
Okay. All right, so let's move ahead.
Welcome back, folks. I was Lukey four times with the gnome song, proving once again that you don't have to gnome alone. All right, so now I have notes from Bill.
Very, very long, so feel free to skip.
They're just double-spaced.
Yeah, Bill's very long-winded.
Okay, so Star Wars notes. Page 7. Loved the authority stuff is fun line. Stalls Vader says, oh, snap, guess what I saw first. I find it funny that Luke was using oh, snap back then and still uses it today, like in the video podcast. Second, what does he see? Maybe it's a reference I don't get. He sees a thing, Bill.
Well, I don't know what he saw. It doesn't make sense to me.
Ask the next question, he'll find it.
What page? Yes. 12. Well, this is on page 7.
Page 7, all right, let's see.
Page 6. I wrote down page numbers when I could.
Yay. You're just a little overachiever, aren't you, Bill?
I'm a fanboy.
Wait, okay, describe it again. I'm trying to find it in the book here.
When Stiles Vader says, oh, snap, guess what I saw? I could be, there's not actual numbers on there. I just counted. So I could be counting from a different point than you would be.
You're not really kicking right now, Josh.
Here we go. Here.
Well, he just did now.
The fetus has nerd rage.
Yeah, I essentially threw that line in there just as a pop culture reference. And I guess the thing that he is seeing is the princess being brought to him at that moment.
Already.
So the troopers are walking in with the princess, and he is seeing her being brought in, and that's when he says, oh, snap, guess what I saw. So that's what the context of that was.
So. Being carried is kind of like floating. Page 12. The sign on the cliff says, huge mother cliff. Is that supposed to be huge mother of a cliff, or is it like a mother ship type reference?
No, it's supposed to be mother as in short for motherfucker.
Ah.
Huge mother cliff.
I thought it was supposed to be Mother of a Cliff.
Both are acceptable. Page 14. I love how Obi's place has a huge sign, but Luke couldn't find it. Page 15. Anyone else notice that the word will appears twice? The rebellion will know how to retrieve it?
Yeah, he had other grammatical errors. We're not going to go over the grammatical errors.
But I found one.
Grammatical error.
Yeah, there is some irony there.
We break the record.
It's no spell check on paper, folks. Page 19. I love all the 80s aliens in the bar, but I can't remember the eggplant guy with one eye and a cape. Everybody!
Eggplant Wizard!
Thank you. Bill loves the name of the ship, the Potassium Vulcan, and frankly, I do too. Page 22. I love that Chubrata wears Twinkies and that the ship is made of Legos.
Damn it,
By the way, Millennium Falcon made of Legos? First.
What's that royalty Lego?
Can we isolate, you know, I love that Chubrata wears Twinkies and the ship is made of Legos as the promo for this episode? I think that encompasses everything we're doing today. Page 23. I loved that there is no lower seat cushion. Well, then you're screwed. Line. And then they had to press the buttons in order to get the ship to lunch.
The Skype problem with Kyle's very distracting.
Yes, Skype, you're being a little bit robot-y right now.
Skype, you should.
You want me to leave and come back?
Maybe you should. Yeah. See if you can sign off and sign out again to see if that makes it better.
Fine.
Wow, Insane Ian was here for a moment.
Hey! Shut up, Ian!
Alright.
Do.
Stop tapping.
Hi, did you all say horrible things about me while I was gone?
Yes. We called
awesome.
Ian. All right, moving on.
Kyle, are you Ian?
Wow, that's obscure. Page 24. I do not understand the dry that one out, you can fertilize you law online. What am I missing? My best guess is that Vader is full of crap so he can be used to fertilize a lawn with, but why does he have to be dried out first? I was wondering... Oh, I'm sorry. I'll let you answer that
These
first.
These are very specific questions. I'm not sure if the listener would.
That's why I said you could skip things.
Yeah, you might want to consider skipping some of
We'll try to rapid fire these as quickly as possible. But basically, yes, that's the metaphor. That is a thing that Jason Stahl used to say all the time to imply that somebody was full of crap. If someone would say something like, yeah, dry that one out, you could fertilize your lawn. So
if you knew Max, you'd be laughing. I was wondering where the name Ottenray came from until the Pig Latin guy. All right. page 39. You can tell a high school geek wrote this because snobby jocks have their own holding cell. But why is the Empire holding Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Yeah, she was a go-to punchline back in 89, so... Yeah.
See, she punched the cop, and then there you go.
Yeah.
Overall, Bill says, I found it confusing that Obi had three names like Obi, Mike, and Obi, and then Ben Volkenobi.
Well, that was me awkwardly trying to shoehorn two things together that didn't go together, so there.
Bill says, I loved how you changed the plot to flow better, especially having Luke go to train as a Jedi first before they attacked the Death Star.
yeah, that was basically because as a child I found Empire Strikes Back to be the most boring of the three Star Wars films. Like, basically, Sarah just looked at me like I'm, you know...
Like he's out of his mind.
Like she wants to file for a divorce.
If looks could kill...
Shit!
I'm gonna
go live in the shed now.
I get to live with the snowblower, yay!
Unpopular opinions are bad for relationships, folks.
Well, no, seriously, as a kid, it's like the parts with Yoda were cool, but the rest of Empire Strikes Back was like... long and boring to me for the most part. So, you know, yeah. I'm like, all right, let's just have the cool part with Yoda and then get to Jedi as quickly as possible, where all the cool stuff happens with the awesome Muppets.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be Darth Vader so bad.
All
I wanted to do was be Darth Vader. That
explains so much.
And now you are.
And now I am.
That surprises no one.
Luke, I'm your wife.
Thank you.
We shall call her Ellie.
All right.
Okay, so Bill says, and I think this needs to be the longest part of this discussion, the I'd buy that for a dollar bit seemed really cheesy at first, but got funnier as more tags were added to it. Luke, you said I'd buy that for a dollar like 50 friggin' times in the course of this comic.
Yeah, I thought it was a little forced though.
Okay,
a lot of times.
Here's the thing. Have you noticed in the Star Wars trilogy, every major character says the phrase, I've got a bad feeling about this at least once. Yeah.
Even Paul Reubens.
Yeah. This was my version of that. Every major character says, I'd buy that for a dollar once in the run of the book. Because I loved that thing from RoboCop. I'd buy that for a dollar. So, yeah.
He still continued to say that at least up till a few years ago.
Yeah, he did.
Luke said that regularly just in life.
And put it in a song.
Yes.
About Sarah.
Speaking of which, Luke, this leads me to a song idea, but I'll talk to you about this later once I can lay down a little bit more groundwork for it.
Okay.
Preview for people paying attention.
Yes.
All right.
Who?
Bill says, am I the only one who thinks Haim looks like a Ferengi? I know that's just his hairstyle, but it looks like his ears are really big.
Well, the ironic part about that is in the back of the Star Trek The Next Generation parody comic, I did a potential... Deep Space Nine parody, and I made the Jared Haim character Quark. So,
yes.
because I actually had some ideas of what I wanted to do if I had made that comic, because, as I'm sure you all know, Deep Space Nine is my favorite of the Star Trek series. In fact,
I'm looking at a Cisco toy on top of his computer.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine,
Deep Space Nine
is my favorite sci-fi series ever. So, yeah.
Wow.
So. Okay, at this point, Bill realized that this was really long, so the rest of the notes are just like kind of one paragraph per issue.
Okay.
Star Source 2. The secret rebel base was all light up like Ben's place, but they also had HBO. okay, everybody get ready to yell at Bill. Who is Count Floyd? I don't get that reference.
SCTV!
Dear God, Bill!
I never got to watch much SCTV.
What's
SCTV? I've never
watched
it. Chad! easily Yay. Predictable nerd rage.
I got a roommate in the murder shed.
I've never watched it either.
Yes, Joe Flaherty of SCTV played Count Floyd, who hosted a Monster Chiller Horror Theater, which would be them showing really bad movies. And every so often they would do a bit where he was showing movies in 3D, and they had these, like, you know, really, you know, cheesy, you know, fake effects with John Candy where they would, you know, would you like them pancakes? And they would, like, hold the pancakes up to the TV screen really close. So it was just another thing that was, like, I think it was on Nick at Night at the time. So it was in the frontal lobe of my brain, like, oh, Count Floyd, scary. Ooh. So for the trench thing, I thought it would be funny to throw Count Floyd in there, making a comment about it being 3D. So, yeah.
I'm going to skip ahead just a little, other than to say that of Star Source 2, Bill says he enjoyed the Dementia song references in both.
Yay!
Okay, number three. Now, this is a sentiment I share. I wish I had read this one first.
That's why I was contemplating how, you know, what order people should read them in, because this was meant to be the story that explains who all the characters are. You know.
Yeah, Luke, admittedly, it would have been the parody would have made a lot more sense if we knew who the characters were first, so we knew, you know, it would have helped us understand the jokes, in particular relating to their names a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yep. But anyway, to finish what he said, this one made the entire teenage comedian world make sense. This is definitely the one you need to show people first if you want them to be interested. At first, I thought it was just a near plotless adventure used as an excuse to set up jokes. But once I got into it, I was pleasantly surprised to find some really meaty substance to it. The message of hang out with people who like you for who you are might be a little heavy-handed, but as someone who lived through this, I can relate. I'm pretty sure the high school version of me would have loved these comics. Some of the jokes don't make sense if you just read them, though. I had to mentally picture someone saying them out loud in just the right way to understand. You can tell Luke is struggling with trying to put jokes like what happens around a lunchroom table into the context of a comic medium, and it loses its edge along the way.
Okay. I accept all of that. And yeah, it's super heavy-handed. The heavy-handedness is like, you know, it's more like a heavy giant Thor mallet, you know, with the message in that particular. That was the one that was like, oh god, I have to get through reading this. You know, I can't just skim through it. I actually have to read it and ingest this knowledge. Especially when I get to the page where it's just one giant page of Luke giving exposition to Julie.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, oh, the monologue.
Oh yeah, the page I refuse to read.
Too many words here.
Burn.
Oh man, it's the reason I wouldn't read Kathy. text walls, as far as the eye can see. Okay, on to the Star Trek issue. This is Bill's favorite so far. He says, the jokes were very tight and were the first one in the series to actually make me laugh. I think having the teenage comedian be you, the Q-like guy, frees him up to do any joke he wants and not having to make sense. Other than in past books, he would have made a joke and it seemed like it was forced and stopped the flow. In this book, it felt like watching an episode of Star Trek where they somehow go into another dimension.
Yeah, the cool thing about the Star Trek parody was because I was free to make up my own plot of, you know, a fake Next Gen episode, so I could go any direction I wanted to with it, you know, while still lampooning the overall style of what Next Gen was like, you know. So, you know.
Not to step on Bill's comments, but the Star Trek one is definitely the best one.
Easily.
Me and Josh were reading it together on the plane on the way to Con in the Cob, and we were laughing out loud. I like it a lot better than the Star Wars one because the Star Wars one seems to just follow the plot of Star Wars faithfully, you know, with a joke here and there. And yes. The Star Trek one just is, you know, it's still Star Trek, but it, you know, goes off onto
its all the tropes and
totally
idioms,
own
yeah.
story.
Well,
I wanted to, and we can save this discussion for later if you want, Kyle. I was curious what you thought of the Space Madness page in the Star Trek thing.
We'll get back to that. Okay. Issue number five. This one had some good jokes and decent plots. Not much more to say other than I particularly loved the Akane Tendo and Baxter Stockman jokes. Right back to being the Dennis Miller of high school comics. Number six. I have seen some of the six-panel Teenage Mutant comics before, but never really understood them that well. They didn't make much sense. After reading issue number three, they make more sense now. This is definitely a world you have to start from the beginning rather than jumping in the middle. The jokes were definitely far better translating onto a comic medium. It's neat to see the evolution of your style and see improvements being made.
Well, cool. I mean, another thing I did with that one is I intentionally, you know, didn't use half of the cast, like the kind of more B-roll characters. I just wanted to stick to, you know, the main six, and, you know, just see what I could do with those six characters. Yeah. So, you know, and also, I'm very happy to say, I actually got college credit for working on that one, so
yay!
Oh, speaking of backlash, there was one, okay, there's a comic in here, actually, I'll recite it, just because, and it's not too wordy, but Okay. So, yeah, it's actually four panels. In the first panel, there's Luke and Stahls, and Stahls says, filling out Kyle's applications. And Lukeski goes, yep. And Stahls goes, why? And then Lukeski jumps out on the table and says, in huge letters, because out of all the virtues in life, there is none so noble as an education! And then he's back down writing at the table. And then the final panel is Stahls says, no, seriously. And then Luke says, if I don't, my mom will kill me. And then Stahls goes, ah. And then that's the end. My mom was pissed off when she read that.
Parents just don't understand.
Because, yeah, at that point in my life, it was 96. I was so hardcore into the Dr. Demento show, and I was, you know, just about to start, you know, very soon after that, I would have recorded my first legitimate album, you know, for comedy music. So it's like, you know, I wanted to do something with these comics and, you know, cartoons and funniness, but my college screwed me over and my creative focus was so shifting to comedy music, and I just kind of felt like ripped off looking at, you know, real life Trisha and Jason. They didn't go to college. They seemed to be pretty happy with their lives. You know, how come I had to be saddled with this? You know, was my thinking at the time. I'm not claiming my thinking has changed a lot since then, but, you know, it's I do kind of feel like growing up, I was never given the option of not going to college. And, you know, that was where the frustrations about that led to that.
You're lucky that you have parents that gave a crap.
I totally
not everybody does.
My mom and dad were totally loving and supportive, and my brothers and sisters. I mean, I have such a wonderful family, and I count my blessings so much that I have them, and they're wonderful. But again, at that time in my life, I felt like expressing a frustration, and when my mom saw it, she was pissed.
Me going into college was in defiance of my mom, and she was actually jealous of my college life at times.
Yeah, and it's so fitting. The back ad on the back of issue 6 is, you know, Lukeski's Psycho Potpourri, Fanboys in the Hood and Shadows of the Bunghole. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, well, this is what I'm doing next.
$15 for 2 CDs.
Okay.
Yeah, Luke, wow. Luke, just to let you know, you're not the only one who had both supportive parents and a mama who got pissed off at the depiction of a mom in one of their comics.
It wasn't even directly a depiction of a mom. It was just a comment about a mom.
A reference to a mom. About a mom. All right, so here are my notes. Now, Luke, I am both in these attempting to be constructive and also far more brutal than these guys. Know that it comes from the point of view of someone who wants to help and also someone who realizes, yeah, these are high school comics. I totally get it.
Kyle's thoughts?
Yes.
Should we do a little round and see if people who didn't send you notes want to say anything?
It's a good idea.
I could
say something. Okay, Jared, take the floor.
Let me grab the comments for a second.
Make sure you're the mic in here.
Okay.
And then before we move, let's do everybody except Kyle, and then let's do a song break, and then let's do News of the Stupid, and then we'll get to Kyle.
We're going to finish with Kyle.
At some point, Kyle will be in charge like I told him he was.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Right, well, we'll have to do, yeah. Anyway.
Okay. So no long-winded here, but
I'm going to keep it as short as I possibly can. One thing is, while the parody comics were good, I did not like them as much as I did the, quote, original stories. So, to me, the origin story, the remakes, and the striptease is one of my favorites. Because I just love the lives of these characters, where these characters came from, and how these characters evolve. You know, there's a group of friends, they're outcasts, they're sort of the people that I wish I knew in high school, you know. And I wish I had known you then to have hung out with you and, yes, been in this damn comic. you know, I love the characters. I honestly fully believe that the original stories, these characters, if you do a slight reboot into the modern day, maybe them in a college setting, certain sort of like some of the webcomics that I read myself, you know, this could be a pretty damn good weekly or bi-weekly webcomic. You know, these characters, these adventures that these characters have, or non-adventures, I guess is a correct term. And I love these characters. I want to see more of these characters. I would love to see a reboot of these in the modern day, you know. At, you know, just the high school, college ages, but in today's world, how that would happen, you know, the Hollywood reboot that everyone hates. I want to see that happen with Teenage Comedian.
Shia LaBeouf as Luke Skeeter.
Oh, God, no. I want to worst that on my worst enemy.
Okay, well, thank you.
But yeah, that's my short and sweet version of it. I love the original stories better than the parodies, and I want to see these characters again.
Okay.
Okay, Ken?
Cool. Yeah, well, like I said, I saw, of course, yes, though I was interested in the characters, my favorite one was the Star Trek one, but are there dates on these? Because there was one question I just had a thought when you were mentioning dates on this. Does it say when the Star Trek one was made?
92 to 93-ish.
Okay. Because it reminds me of one episode in TNG where it was all sexual themed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know.
I remember there was one in that season. I was wondering if that was before. Because I know that one was in November 91.
Are you talking about the Naked Now where they have the virus and everyone gets, you know, drunk or horny or whatever?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that was like the...
No, not the first episode. It was in 91 because I remember somehow I was watching Deanna Troi mixing this drink heavily or... Was the one with the glasses.
In other
glasses,
words, he's saying maybe you stole the plot.
Is that the one where Data got lucky?
No.
No.
Was later
he is fully now. Functional.
It actually reminded me of something. That was the weekend I met someone that week. That's why I know it was that weekend. But other than that, I enjoyed the Star Trek one the most. Just because it reminded me of that.
Well, cool. I would just say I initially read these like 6 years ago or something, and I was such a subservient fangirl at the time that I didn't want to.
I gotta wrap my brain around that.
I didn't want to tell you how cheesy I thought they were, but I thought they were pretty cheesy for the most part. But I liked the Star Trek one. That one did not take effort to get through in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It's just entertainment. Josh, comments?
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty much going to be saying what everybody else has said so far, which is essentially that the Star Trek one, by far and away, was the best.
Well, that's not what Jared said.
Well, okay, everybody but you.
That's not what this guy's going to say.
I think probably part of it is everybody and their grandmother has done a Star Wars parody of some sort. Or
yeah.
There are not that
Although
many.
Not at the time when he made it, but now, yeah.
I mean, it's still Star Trek is also very popular. Not as many parodies out there. I thought that the characters were pretty well developed. It was not just a kind of a complete rehash of this is, you know, the Star Wars trilogy. I'd like to see more of it.
Another note about the whole thing with Luke seeing things like Empire not being important. You'll notice Boba Fett is not in the story.
Yeah.
I did not consider Boba Fett important enough to be included.
But then you wrote a song about him.
I wanted to be Boba Fett when I was a kid.
But he's not in there that much.
Well,
just
yeah, that,
little
that's that
quick scenes here and there.
Yeah,
he's got a huge fan following.
He's got four
weird.
In the whole trilogy. He's got four lines of dialogue, five if you count. You know.
Okay.
So, anyway, moving on.
What about the Christmas special?
What about the Christmas
exist.
Special?
By the way, Happy Life Day.
Breakman Z
was B. Arthur.
Breakman Z.
I did like the Star Trek parody one. I do also agree with Jarrett. That I did like the original stories. I do have to say, of the strip teases, one of my favorites was the telemarketer and the shifting in languages.
Yeah. Remember back when there were phones in houses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, back in the day when we didn't have these fancy schmancy computers and email.
And they had cords, and we liked it.
Flibbity flu. My Coke had a number 2 at the end of it.
So I think we're going to do a song slash potty break, and then a news of the stupid, and then hand the reins back to Kyle.
Let's poop a song.
And you would have to time that just as I was taking a drink of water.
Right. Let's Poop a Song is my TV's Kyle cover band.
Hey!
All right, so here are songs coming up by Adam Warrock and The Cog.
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 till it burns from the light of a firefly. So small when you consider it against the rest of the sky. The underdog held together with tape and twine. Scraped together, living on the outer limits of life. Just terraform planets, worlds from rock and granite. Dirt and tumbleweeds blow, but nobody'll panic. Where it's so quick that friends turn to enemies. I'm just trying to find my own dose of serenity. This is our new Rebel Alliance, 2517. Fight for your right for independence. Free from meddling from corporate heads. And just the chance to stretch imaginations wide. Nobody can tell us. We make the music like they made the old west. Clans who stick together succeed despite the stress. From trying to find a home amidst the wasteland we see. But you can't take the sky from me. It's like, take my love and take my land. Take me to a place where I cannot stand. Yeah. Cause I'm still free, and you can't take the sky from me. It's like, take these words and take these beats. Take me to a place where the crowds fill the streets. Yeah, I don't care, cause I'm always gonna dream. And you can't take the sky from me. Still it burns like the light of a firefly. And our coats are brown and our eyes are wide. We walk the thin line between right and wrong. Sometimes you gotta bend the rules when you're out here this long. It's like the music to this song, yeah, we sampled it. Cause we got a pure love for the culture, best believe that we're fans of it. Cause everything's shiny, everything is beautiful. This is fan culture told now in musical form. We hold a torch for the battle of serenity valley. We ride a horse as we're running from the bandits and baddies. We try to help when there's people in need. All we ask for is space for my people to breathe, please. Maybe you weren't a fan of Westerns or the Fox Channel. Maybe you hated rap music, that's understandable. Maybe it opened your mind for all to see. And now the sky is a place where you long to be free. It's like, take my love and take my land. Take me to a place where I cannot stand. Yeah, I don't care, cause I'm still free. And you can't take the sky from me. It's like, take these words and take these beats. Take me to a place where the crowds fill the streets. Yeah, I don't care, cause I'm always gonna dream. And you can't take the sky from me. And it starts from a spark in the heart of a fan. And it moves to a fire across the woods in the land. And it lights up the night and you bathe in its warmth. And together we found each other and still we find more. This the beauty of loving the things you love. Cause what started from a show went above, found so many others. Sisters and brothers from another mother. Together we huddled and we spoke to each other in a code. So now you know. And I don't need no cold ram, critics and haters. All I need is the crew of these sinners and players. Cause adventures in the skies like the dreams in our minds. And we hold the love close, feel it so deep inside. And still it burns like the light of a firefly. What started small spread wide over time. And it filled up the night sky, it blew our minds. And this light will never die, no, never die.
Okay, it's news of the stupid time. Everyone,
be the fuck quiet.
Or laugh if you think things are funny.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What?
Whoa! Oh. The girl left the toilet seat up.
No, I left the lid up.
Yeah.
I thought she was pointing at me. Go back to ice cream.
I normally
it's Lucas
put it
the
down
lid
at
up.
Home. I just have a hard time doing it at other people's houses.
It's Lucas with the lid up.
Oh, sorry. It's okay. Stupid time.
Tears of the stupid.
Okay. Quiet. Okay.
And now it's time for
news of the stupid.
By Devo Spice, visit DevoSpice.com, reported by the internet from all over the world, and submitted by fans like you.
Word.
I guess it's stupid to prove an innocent, cause it makes it so easy to incriminate.
Tattoo artist Ryan Fitzgerald from Dayton, Ohio, was hit with a $100,000 lawsuit last month by his ex-girlfriend, Rossi Brovent. She claims that her boyfriend was supposed to tattoo a scene from Narnia on her back, but instead tattooed a large image of a pile of excrement with flies buzzing around it.
Oh.
I saw the photo. It happened.
I saw it too.
Oh.
Apparently, Ryan found out that Rossi had cheated with a longtime friend of his, but instead of confronting her about it, he acted like everything was normal and hatched a plan for revenge. Originally, Rossi tried to have Ryan charged with assault, but the ingenious tattoo artist had covered his bases by plying Rossi with wine and tequila shots and getting her to sign a consent form that stated that the design was at the artist's discretion. No word from Rossi on whether the illicit night of passion with Ryan's friend was worth it. Moral of the story? Never cheat on a tattoo artist or you might end up with permanent poo. I pity the stool.
A former Colorado lawman with a record so distinguished that he was once honored as the nation's sheriff of the year now finds himself in a jail that was named for him, accused of offering methamphetamine in exchange for sex from a male acquaintance. Patrick Sullivan, 68, handcuffed, dressed in an orange jail uniform and walking with a cane, watched Wednesday as a judge raised his bail amount to $500,000 and sent him to the Patrick J. Sullivan Jr. Detention Facility. The current sheriff, Grayson Robinson, who worked as undersheriff for Sullivan from 1997 until he took over the job in 2002, said the department was shocked and saddened at his arrest. Robinson said the case is still under investigation, including where and how Sullivan might have gotten the drugs. He declined to say if authorities suspect Sullivan of using drugs or if others might be charged. Robinson told the Denver Post a search of Sullivan's home led to the discovery of a large amount of, quote, adult homosexual pornography, unquote. Patrick Sullivan is guilty until proven innocent of loving gay sex and meth!
Hey, it worked! This story was submitted by Kyle Hudson. Here's a good way to ensure your kid gets his lunch money stolen on a regular basis. Meet Dovahkiin Tom Kellermeyer. That's right, Dovahkiin, as in the protagonist of The Elder Scrolls V: Skyrim. Born 11-11-11, the same day that the game was released, he's made his family the, quote, winners of a contest that ensures free Bethesda games for life. Bethesda, in a publicity stunt announced in February, promised lifelong free games to anyone who named their child, which had to be born on 11-11, after the character. Whether the company expected anyone to take it up on the offer is another matter entirely. Megan and Eric Kellermeyer did just that, though. In a blog post, the parents acknowledged the name could cause their son some issues, but say it's one they truly love and likely would have chosen if Bethesda hadn't launched the contest. Yeah, Dovahkiin's parents say they told friends and family members of their decision before their son was born, and very few raised concerns. And with a more common middle name, he'll always have an out. He will be perfectly normal and a common middle name if the first name becomes too much for him, or if we just want to call him a nickname, says Megan. Still, there are some upsides to the name, despite the almost inevitable playground taunting it will likely engender at some point. For one thing, how many kids have their own theme song? Plus, there's that whole free Bethesda Games for Life thing, which is pretty rad, unless, of course, he doesn't like turn out to like video games.
People are stupid, and once again, they have proven it.
So is the newborn infant a mage, a bard, or an orc? That's what I'll need to ask myself in a few months.
This has been News of the Stupid.
Hooray!
Yay!
So you're naming your child Link, right?
Of course.
Okay.
But if he goes missing, that'll be terrible.
You have to, you know, be put into a cell that you're named after.
And now that I've wrenched control from Kyle, I'm okay, pretending Kyle to give it back.
Kyle, rip out my soul and stomp on it. Let's go.
Go for it.
Oh, hi. I know, but like, you know, with the intent of helping you. Okay.
This is an intervention.
So, yeah, I also disagreed with the order that you wanted these read in, because we're tossed right into this long parody with no idea who these characters are. But that said, it doesn't really matter that much, because in particular in the Star Wars ones, they aren't characters in here as much as they are joke-delivering husks. You had jokes you wanted to tell, and it didn't seem to matter who delivered it.
Okay.
So we have bitch slap number one. I'm counting bitch slaps here.
kind bitch slaps.
Kind, gentle, loving bitch slaps.
Remember, I was 15.
Big slap out of love.
Yes. Oh, yes. I believe I've already made that preface.
22 years ago.
So, I didn't want to... Yeah, for that reason, I didn't want to address artwork too much, because you're clearly a much better artist than you were when you drew these. That said, a little bit more contrast in character design would probably help. Everyone's, like, roughly the same height. Faces are fairly similar. And unless somebody's hair is drastically different, you don't really necessarily know the difference between the characters.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that made these parody ones a little bit harder.
Well, yeah, again, it's like, in my mind, they're in color, so it would be easier to point out who's who, you know, in my mind. But again, that's dumb reasoning.
Now, I will say that in general, I find Lukeski, Kazi, and Trisha interest me the most. I find Stahl's actually completely redundant to Kazi, and I can't tell the difference between Nancy and Julie as hard as I try.
Yeah.
Okay. And another interesting thing is that during that time in my life, like late high school, early college, in my real life, you know, Trisha Mansky was my best friend. She was the person I was hanging out with and had the most, you know, fun times with. And, you know, the real life counterpart, she was a New Kids on the Block fan. She then switched to EMF. She switched to Erasure. She quote-unquote got into being a rave girl. She's like, oh, I'm going to go to raves, and I'm going to drink smart drinks and wear little white gloves, and we're going to dance around in black lights. I'm like, you live in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. You're not going to do any of these things. You know? But you think you are, you know, and that's kind of, you know, lovingly picking on her for that type of stuff. And other things I could go into about her, but I won't for multiple reasons. Mainly being that they would bore you.
It's the sort of thing you just tap her on the head and go, oh, that's nice. You just keep telling yourself that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir, I can't hit you.
So yeah, it's like a lot of the humor for the character from Trisha just came from, you know, being around someone who is that, you know, wonderfully, adorably ditzy and just having it make it so easy to come up with great, you know, jokes to be delivered, you know. So yeah, anyway, I'll move on. Or you move on.
So I think I have only one more thing I'll say about character design is that three of the male leads have no visible pupils, which is kind of rough in a visual medium.
That's a good point. I tried with Kazi to make it like, you know, like because each eye was a, you know, nine, like a Rubik's Cube grid, you know? So I tried to view it like the center square was the pupil, so to speak. So when you were, you know, he was looking around, you know, that it... I'd try to draw the lines to make it more obvious which direction he was looking. So,
still, you gave yourself an uphill battle there with, three of the male leads having no visible pupils. One thing that's super funny about these to me, because it's very similar in my high school comics and probably most people's high school comics, is that they approach relationships in a way they do not work.
Yes.
And I mean like actual romantic relationships. They're easy, way too easy or way too hard. Young Luke, I'm referring to Young Luke as a writer, not Luke, the current guy I'm talking to right now. The Luke who wrote these has a strange, almost misogynistic view of women, but so did comedy at the time when we were growing up. Nancy and Julie are treated almost exclusively as objects, though angry ones. But Trisha and Rosie, not so much, what makes them immediately more interesting to me.
Yeah, it's like, I remember, okay, there's a weird tie-in both between relationships with women and relationships to drugs and alcohol. Because that whole Nancy Reagan pounded in, you know, just say no to drugs, all drugs are evil.
Oh, yeah.
You know, blah, 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 blah. I think that's at least part of the reason why I bought in, you know, to all of that propaganda to believe, like, you know, like my freshman year in college, I once went into the hallway of the dorm I was living on, and I could smell something weird in the air, and I managed to figure out relatively quickly that, oh, shit, that must be marijuana smoke. And I panicked. I went back into my room. I closed the door. I put a towel underneath the bottom jamb of the door.
So you wouldn't get a contact
and,
high?
And then I moved my bed as close as I could to the window and then opened the window and slept with my head as close to the window as I could get. Because that's how paranoid I was about drugs and how uninformed I was about drugs. And I didn't.
We don't want Satan to get in.
Exactly. And I didn't cool out about any of this shit until much later in my college life when I dated a girl who was a pothead, and I just kind of was like, oh, wait, you mean people can smoke pot and still live productive lives? Oh, I guess, you know, maybe things aren't the way I was brought up to think. So anyway, that whole notion of, like, a message is being pounded in, it's like all of the, you know, stuff, like, basically everything I need to know about life I learned from watching stand-up comedians, and all the female comedians bitched about how horrible men were back in the late 80s, early 90s. And then there was also, you know, all this, you know, I'm not taking it lightly because it isn't meant to be taken lightly, but the whole, you know, female no means no thing when it comes to, you know, how men are supposed to be with women. And that all led me to, like, be afraid to do anything along the lines of making a move, you know, with a girl if I was dating her. It's like I was afraid to, like, you know, whatever that... I don't even, like, when people talk about first base, second base, I don't even know what any of the bases are because I never tried to go to any of them. I was too scared. And I was basically asking permission to do every little thing. You know, the wonderful woman I eventually lost my virginity to basically had to kind of grab me, like, look, this is, you know, figure it out. Here, me, now. And then I managed to figure it out. So, yeah. Like, oh, okay, she's letting me know that it's okay that I may want to actually do this and that she's not going to mace me and blow a whistle and bring in the police and I'm going to be hauled away for being, you know, immoral and evil. So
I married the biggest dork.
Congratulations, Sarah.
So, yes. All that being said, I forgot what I was watching recently, but somebody brought up the concept of wish fulfillment in writers. And when I heard that, I'm like, man, that was me writing all those stories. This is what I wanted back then, was to have some kind of a relationship with a girl that I really, you know, cared about and cared about me and blah, blah, blah. So, like, me writing these stories.
And would abuse you a little bit.
Yeah.
And look what you have now.
And before that.
And you married Darcy.
And before that.
And on a weird side note, back when I did the 95 remakes, there was a gag in one of those stories where, in a very Looney Tunes type of way, again, you know, Tiny Toon Adventures being an influence, you know, I had Kazi and Luke doing a scene talking about hitting someone in the face with a frying pan for comic effect, and then to prove a point, Luke is sitting next to Trisha, and he just wangs her in the head with the frying pan for no reason to make a point about surprise being a better form of comedy. So I showed these to some of the people I did comedy sports improv with, and I asked for some feedback, and one of the feedback things I got from somebody was, I don't like your violence against women in these comics. And I'm like, really? It's like, you know, what if it was like, you know, Acme Dynamite blowing up in her face, and then she's like, you know, all Wile E. Coyote looking. Would you have figured it out then that I wasn't meaning to be actually violent, that it was a cartoon
violence?
Okay,
you're getting too long-winded. We have to move on.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so one of the things I was getting a lot of amusement out of was just how many hormones were in these. They were clearly written by a horny teenager, and more as it goes on.
Oh, not just a horny teenager, a horny repressed teenager. I was raised so Catholic. My dad was a Marine, so he made us have our, you know, take on Catholicism be with, like, Marine-like, you know, adherence to the rules
of God. And you had the whole
God.
Catholic thing.
Yeah. So, it's like, when I got to the 95 remakes and I was trying to, like, do the story that takes place at the beach, and I was trying to draw the female characters, it's like, I actually went to my friend Mike Guthrie, who was with me at Comedy Sports, and I'm like, I'm just having problems drawing these characters, and he, like, looked at one of them, I think it was Julie, and is like, she doesn't have hips. And I'm like,
had to tell you women had hips.
it's like, what am I missing here? And it's like, oh yeah, I'm allowed. And this is retarded because by then I had done, you know, it's like freshman year, you know, very first thing you do. It's like, oh, we're going to draw the human form. So I had drawn naked women dozens of times by the time I hit that point. I never thought that I could equate the same things to my comic scripts. Like, oh yeah, that's the way real women look, you know, and it was just leftover repression, you know, keeping me from, you know, becoming a better artist in that sense, you know, and not, you know, staying away from the John Crisfalusi method of drawing female characters. It's like, I kind of felt like growing up, I was not allowed, even when I was trying to do stand-up comedy or trying to do improv with my mom and my dad having to drive me to all these things, I wasn't allowed to make dirty jokes, or I wasn't allowed to, you know, express any kind of sexuality at all.
So you're a repressed teenager.
So it's like, that's the way, that's why that ended up the way it was, is because I wanted to, this was me experimenting for the first time with doing any kind of humor that had to do with sexuality.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm horny. I think I'll make a comic book.
Yes. And the whole relationships things goes back to the wish fulfillment thing. Anyway.
Okay, Kyle, take it.
All right. But yeah, as a matter of principle, I refuse to read the text wall in School Lunch and a True Friendship because a character isn't allowed to tell me what the point is. The point has to be clear in the storytelling because you need to show and don't tell.
Again, I was 17. I didn't know what I was doing.
You're not on the defense.
No, dude, it's okay.
Okay.
This is defense offense.
Let's see. Okay, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because it'll just sound like I'm beating up on you. All right. While characters tend to look static in general, every now and then there's a drawing that actually, you know, that drawing that was done to be a funny drawing and it made it so much better for me. It's just like, okay, wow, he had fun doing that drawing. I wanted to see more of that.
I'd like to know examples of which specific ones you're talking about.
It probably includes that space madness thing you were talking about, but if I had them in front of me, I'd be able to tell you. Yeah. But, you know, every now and then it'll be like, oh, okay, this is, you know, for lack of a better word, this is a way off model drawing. I can tell he had fun doing it, and I wanted to see more of that. Because a lot of times, you know, a drawing of a character on one page would look exactly like a drawing of a character on another page. You know, I wanted to see you stretch your wings a little bit. And when you did, it was nice.
I remember I showed the comic, the 95 remakes to my friend Ray, a.k.a. Rock and Roll Ray, and when I asked him for feedback, which panels did you really like, he specifically went through to find the single most boring panel in the thing to say that one was his favorite. So his favorite panel was one of the kind of comedy silence beat things where it was just Jonas in a panel by himself with nothing else around him. Like saying nothing because the it was a pause to set up the joke he was about to say, so yeah. But the space madness thing. So I don't know if you figured this out by looking at it, but when I drew that page, I had recorded space madness and I paused it on the VCR so that I could get these specific individual drawings of the way Ren looked when he was saying all those lines because I love the space madness cartoon so much.
Yeah, I could tell.
I'm like, I want this to look as much exactly like the original as possible. So, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, at the same time, you know, copying off a video is a perfectly valid way to, you know, learn to draw as much as it's like, copying. No, you gotta learn somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the story Moose and Girl, which is a funny title, that was the first place that the character Luke Ski became interesting to me, because he wasn't just there to be a quote spewing receptacle. His actions drove the story, and it was a better story as a result. And although I would say I would like more of a reason for him to realize the error of his ways at the end.
Okay, cool. You have to understand, I haven't heard anyone talk about this work to me ever in my life, and it's so cool to hear this kind of feedback, the positive and the negative, so I am appreciating all of this. Yeah. But cool, awesome.
I enjoyed all three Ranma references, but I'm... I am probably the only person who found all three of them.
Did you see the Scud reference? Or actually, there's probably multiple Scud references. What am I talking about? Anyway.
I would have enjoyed seeing more impossible stuff, because in particular, it would make Kazi's existence in this universe easier to grasp. Just like, you know, more stuff that couldn't really happen in real life.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the concept of Beavis and Butthead versus Daria. Beavis and Butthead do a million things that would get people killed in real life. Daria is just something they could have done in live action, but they did it in animation.
Quick side note. I like the fact that on the new Beavis and Butthead episodes, they specifically made sure to mention at one point that Daria moved away.
Yeah, I like that too.
Just so that us fans
we'll
were like,
stop
asking
about it.
Well, where's Daria? It's like, she moved away, dumbass. It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, there's a surprising amount of subtle continuity in the new show.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yes. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, so those were my specific notes. So I guess the big subject now is like how you move forward. And I was thinking about possible routes for it. I think that this teenage comedian would be better served if it were simplified, and then you just had the main character, like the very main characters, and other characters existed. You know, not because, hey, I have a cast of characters, but to serve the story. I one thing I was hoping to see, and it seemed like the beginnings of the setup of this were there, but then it was, you know, the series seemed more interested in following this group of characters around than following what the title, you know, implies. I want to see a teenage, you know, this teenage kid trying to make his name in comedy,
at a club.
and then like running into all the kinds of weirdos you would run into being a teenager attempting to do comedy, and I feel like a cast of characters could build that way. And actually, him and a fly, like two unlikely things: a teenager and a talking fly trying to pursue a comedy career.
Yeah, I like that idea.
The Luke's geek character goes to a convention.
Yeah, not a single bit was he like, you know, performing.
Yeah,
stand-up.
Probably at a club, or he implied that he was, but he never.
Again, it's like me building this Bible of what I wanted, because you know the Simpsons had you know just barely gotten started, and even within the first couple of seasons they had established this huge world and dozens of characters, and so in my mind I'm thinking that's what I have to do. I have to build a world and you know have explanations for all these characters and why things are set up that way, and you know I'll eventually get around to doing things that had to do with his actual stand-up performing. But for now, the main thing was getting to know these high school friends of his or whatever. So, you know.
But I think you ought to do is like start doing this as a webcomic, because really, the more you write, the easier this will get, and the more obvious these things will become. I think if you just start with the cast of characters, including only Luke, Kazi, and maybe Trisha as a support system, just like. Start with just that sort of simplicity and then see what characters grow up around. Like the big difference on The Simpsons is that these characters existed because the story needed them to be there, and then maybe they revisited these characters later. That's how they got such a huge cast, because these are characters that, you know, gradually showed up instead of all being there at once.
Yeah.
You know, there was no intro episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah. These characters exist because Matt didn't want to give up his bunny characters, so he, made them
use, yeah.
Named them after his family. But yes, yeah, I see your point. And I don't think I've told you this, and I don't think I've told too many people this ever, but in college I did comedy sports with a woman named Kathy Purcell. Kathy Purcell's brother is Richard Purcell.
Whoa, really?
Yes. So
neat.
So this was when Ren and Stimpy was either still on the air or had just gotten taken away from John Kay. And I wrote Richard a fan letter and asked Kathy to send it to him. And I
I'm trying to remember what I had done at that point. I think I had done. There was the Star Wars thing. There was the Teenage Comedian pilot comic book, and there was the Star Trek parody. So I probably sent him the pilot comic book and maybe the Star Trek parody, and then a bunch of other art. I did a parody, or I did a piece of fan art of Ren and Stimpy as Chuck D and Flavor Flav, Public Renemy.
Oh.
With like a whole bunch of, so basically it was a bunch of Public Enemy references tied into Ren and Stimpy, and I thought it was really funny and clever, so I sent that along with it, with a bunch of questions. It's like, oh, what about this? What about that? And yeah, it was after, just after John Kay had gotten the show taken away and they started airing new episodes, and I was so young and wide-eyed that I was like, you know, well, you know, can't we all just get along? You know, I want to see new episodes. You know, I think it's sad, you know. But, you know, asking a bunch of questions. So his email, he mailed me back a letter. And I think he gave me some, like, you know, issues of some, of like, Wild Cartoon Kingdom magazine and some other stuff. Like,
I loved that magazine.
Yeah. So it's like, here, in the response, he was like, you asked a bunch of questions. Here's the answers to them. Yes, no, no, yes, no. Fuck you. No. Yes. He actually said fuck you to me in a response to my fan letter. So basically he's like being a dick to me in his response because I didn't make a photocopy of the letter I sent him.
And who is this guy again? What is his fame?
Richard Purcell. He went on to create I Am Weasel and what other stuff, Kyle?
Oh, okay. Actually, he didn't create it, but he was a writer on those.
Oh, okay.
Most of the cartoons.
Though. Yeah, but he's done a bunch of work in animation. Actually, he's done a bunch of SpongeBob now. Which is kind of
that makes sense. A lot of that crew ended up there. Vince Wallace was there.
Yeah. So it's like I was, and then his critique of my Teenage Comedian work was that I had too many characters and that I needed to concentrate on, you know, just, you know, a couple or three, you know, so he had some practical advice in there. Oh, no, wait, here's the other thing he said that really stuck with me is like, oh, I saw your Public Renemy drawing, we here at the office got a real kick out of it. A kick in the balls and it hurts like hell. How dare you? I was so upset that I didn't go to school that day. I stayed home from college that day because I was so upset about the shit he said to me as a fan, you know, because I held Ren and Stimpy on such a high pedestal. And then I get this fan letter back, and he's being, no, yes, no, fuck you, meh, 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 how do you should just stick to a couple characters. And it's like,
you get out as an adult that it was being a wise ass other than the actual helpful critique of your comic, right?
I guess, but back then it was devastating to me. I mean, you know, Luke Ski, Mr. Oversensitive Boy, so, you know.
Still.
That's why I prefaced the hell out of everything I said.
All right, well, yeah. Five people in this room are going to work tomorrow morning, okay. So...
All right. What, was there anything else on your end, Kyle?
Just that I do think you should go ahead and do this as a fan comic. I mean, not a fan comic, a web comic. So not only do you get a, you know, chance to get back into the swing of writing these stories, but building up a fan base that way. That way, when you attempt to do a print version, you have a little bit more of a built-in fan base. And my suggestion also would also to be to do some sort of sketch blog for people to follow. And so it would actually raise a lot more of people's interests in asking you to do artwork for things outside of the dementia community.
Yeah. And now I'm going to show the people here in the room. I did a pencil drawing of Luke and Kazi and sent it to Kyle so that he could ink it. So here is Kyle's inked version of...
Nice!
So I did.
Yeah, I inked that about 10 minutes before the show started.
Oh!
Cool. That looks wow. Really cool.
Luke, I should send you one of these pens that I ink with. They're really nifty.
Wait, say that again, Kyle?
I should send you one of these pens that I ink with. They're really nifty. They're a two-sided brush pen. One of them is a thicker side for doing big, broad lines, and the other one is a tiny little brush that is very comfortable to use even if you hate brush pens.
Cool. I would like to check that out. So, okay, I want to finish this up by reading something, and I'll read it as quickly as I can. Oh, it's long, but I feel like it's an appropriate way to end this. So, as you remember, my bag got stolen, and it was a comic... or it was a spiral notebook that was from my high school days that had a story I wrote but never completed
As far, I mean, I had the whole script worked out, but I never did a quote-unquote remake to bring it into being an actual comic. There were only a couple pages where I had some finished art, and I managed to snap at least one picture of it on my phone just because I felt like posting it on Facebook at that moment. So I'm glad I have at least one record of the image. So at some point after that, I sat down and I typed up the synopsis of the story so that I can share it with everyone, you know, the nearly lost for the ages story. I was a teenage comedian, the flyest of the flies. This was meant to be the story that explained the origin of Kamikaze the Fly. So here we go. Opening, Bob and Doug Great White North parody with Kazi in a beer bottle. Okay, the story starts following the events in the pilot comic book, but before the remakes comic book, so it's sort of an episode 2 of the series. In the high school cafeteria, the cast is eating lunch. Luke, while getting food in the lunch line, does the David Lee Roth, "Give me a bottle of anything and a glazed donut to go," at the lunch lady. Soon Kazi arrives. Julie freaks out, but stops when she notices no one else is freaking out about the giant talking fly. They start to tell her the story of Kazi, and of course, Jared makes a comment about how lame flashbacks are. Flashback to 1 or 2 years previous, freshman or sophomore year, I can't remember which. The drama club is based out of the high school's theater, which is infested with flies. They've announced auditions for Hamlet. Luke plans to audition, Stalls does not. Luke talks Stalls into auditioning by telling him there's going to be a lot of girls in the drama department. Meanwhile, in the new chemistry teacher is introduced, Mr. Liu, who is, of course, based on an actual teacher I had, but that has nothing to do with the story. Jared, our lovable genius asshole with a photographic memory, becomes a TA for Mr. Liu. While doing that, Mr. Liu tells Jared about a steroid-based chemical compound he's been developing to make the teenagers better, stronger, faster, smarter, etc. At the time, I was more inspired by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mutagen concept, but in retrospect, it also leans heavily towards the Captain America Super Soldier Serum idea. A week later, the Hamlet auditions happened, and much to his dismay, Stalls was cast as Hamlet. To make matters worse, the boy-crazy ditz Trisha has been cast as Ophelia. Back in Mr. Liu's lab, he perfects his adolescent hormone organic enhancer, or AHOE for short, a HO, and yes, crystals are made. It's made up of two liquid compounds that need to be mixed together at the proper ratio to safely work, the first being the super crazy powerful mutant juice, the second being the dampening liquid that tempers it to a level to make it do what it's supposed to do without harming or killing the people ingesting it. He decides he wants to test it out, so he sneaks into the school cafeteria to put a small dose of the mixed chemicals in some food about to be served to the students. When he tried to put a drop of it on some gloppy-looking school lunch food, some government agents who have been monitoring his activities that were not mentioned anywhere up till now bust in and shoot the beaker with the super crazy powerful mutant juice, causing its entire contents to spill onto the tray of school lunch food. The agents capture Mr. Liu and oblivious to the repercussions, pour the dampening fluid down the sink and haul Mr. Liu away, with him yelling about what they've just done, which of course they ignore. The lunch lady shows up, grabs the tray of the tainted food, and gives it to Brad. Brad takes it to the theater, where he and Mike are building the sets for Hamlet. Brad sits down to eat it with his beverage thermos, and through some kind of Three Stooges Wile E. Coyote accident, the food gets catapulted up into the rafters of the theater. One of the flies lands on it and starts to eat it. This triggers the fly to start mutating into a typical comic book story fashion, and all the other flies are apparently just sentient enough to realize something bad is happening and fly away. The next day, we see Kazi, now very human-like fly, waking up in the rafters. Rehearsal for Hamlet is happening, which he observes and starts mimicking the actions of the people below. As time goes on, he fashions his hair to look like Stalls' hair. When he sees people cleaning up with brooms and dustpans and garbage cans, he uses the spoon to put all the mutagen-tainted food into the thermos, puts a lid on it, and pushes it off into a corner. This plot device was to explain why more mutant insects didn't get created, and was also meant to be a setup for possible future storylines. More time passes. Kazi sees Stalls and Trisha rehearsing a scene, and when Stalls is told he has to kiss Trisha, he repeatedly says no over and over again with some other snarky comments. They end early because Homer, the head of the drama department, has hired exterminators to fumigate the theater and eliminate all the flies. Later that night, the fumigation starts. Kazi, seeing what the gas is doing to the other flies, manages to escape by crashing through a window and then passing out in the grass. Later, when he regains consciousness, he looks through the window to see what the exterminators sweeping up... sees the exterminator sweeping up thousands of dead flies and throwing them in garbage cans. He then starts screaming no over and over, saying exactly the same thing that Stalls was saying earlier in the theater.
And again, a creature saying no, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I did that first. Okay, apparently I'm the only one that saw that movie. More time passes. Kazi's is still observing, but visibly traumatized. Stalls is rehearsing his soliloquy, but keeps messing it up. In a moment of great frustration, he steps just outside of the spotlight, points at the spot where he was just standing, and shouts, "Is there anybody in this theater who knows how to do this speech right?" Suddenly, Kazi dives down from the rafters, lands in that spot, and perfectly delivers Hamlet's to be or not to be speech. Luke, Nancy, and Stalls watch in shock. This is the one page that I was able to take the photo of. Jared comes up front, wondering what was going on. He captures Kazi, and they all share a now-what moment. Cut to Luke's house. Kazi is locked in some room, sleeping. The rest of the cast is there, trying to figure out what to do, what is going on and what to do. Mr. Liu's name gets brought up somehow, and they talk about rumors of him being arrested and all his computers being confiscated. Jared remembers the compound he had been working on in some, and comes to the conclusion that Liu had something to do with this, and laments not having access to that info anymore. Trisha makes a comment like, "Too bad somebody didn't make hard copies of all his files." Jared has a eureka moment and realizes that he did as one of his TA tasks. He then grabs Trisha and says, "I kiss you, but I don't want to." As they all head out the door to get the hard copies, Trisha looks sad. Jonas asks her what's wrong. She says, "Nobody wants to kiss me." Jonas then kisses her on the end of her nose, Snoopy style, and asks her, "Happy now?" She says yes. He grabs her by a suspender and says, "Good, let's go," pulling her along while she has a cute smile on her face. I mention all of this now because it's one of the few gags I remember with clarity, and because I really liked the art I did for this page and regret not having snapped a picture of it when I read it last month. Upon reading the hard copies, Jared figures out that the serum, besides developing a person physically, also boosts the person's mental ability to learn by observation and repetition and helps develop their ability to concentrate on several things simultaneously. This gives Luke an idea. Cut to later, we see Kazi waking up in the room to witness Luke, Stalls, and Jared carrying a large, heavy TV into the room. Upon seeing the fly awake, Luke recites the lines from Ghostbusters, "It's right here, Ray, it's looking at me," etc. Nancy approaches Kazi and says some kind words. Kazi reaches out and touches her hand. Then Jared yells something at Nancy and scares him away, and they leave the room. We then see that there are about six TVs set up in the room, leading to six VCRs in the adjoining room. Cue montage of Kazi watching all six TVs simultaneously for a week straight as they play for Kazi everything they deem relevant to educate Kazi about their world. This, of course, means everything from pop culture, starting from Sesame Street, classic films like The Goonies, going all the way up to Ren and Stimpy. After a week, Kazi emerges from his room saying, "I get it." They try to come up with a name for him. After a bunch of dumb suggestions, Rosie suggests Kamikaze. I always spelled it with an I at the end. Based on his dive bomb entrance on stage. They would just call him Kazi for short. Right here, I'm cutting out a bunch more embarrassing, cheesy, after-school special dialogue about being happy being yourself or some such crap, which was just like the stuff that made the pilot issue so unbearable to read. After settling on the name, Trisha grabs a nearby Snoopy World War I flying ace doll, removes its pilot hat, and gives it to Kazi to wear to go along with his new name. A few weeks later, it's opening night of Hamlet. Kazi is backstage talking to Luke. Kazi asks Luke why he chose to help him, and Luke tells him it's because he identified with his situation. Kazi goes to visit Nancy in her dressing room. Nancy was cast as Hamlet's mother, giving her a rose, which Kazi says is from Luke. Cut to later, during the play, we get to the part where Stalls, Hamlet, is supposed to kiss Trisha, Ophelia, which he has yet to do in rehearsal because he has known her since kindergarten and feels too awkward about it. When the moment of truth arrives, Stalls starts to bail out again. Two of Kazi's arms reach out from behind Trisha's head and grab Stalls' hair, yanking him in so he kisses her, and mimicking Sebastian from The Little Mermaid, he says, "Kiss de girl." The 10-second kiss ends. Stalls pauses awkwardly for a moment and then says farewell and exits the stage. Trisha says, "Oh, heavenly powers, restore him." Actual dialogue from Hamlet, in case that wasn't obvious. The flashback finally comes to an end. We return to the cafeteria where Julie is having this story told to her. After Stalls makes some comment regarding how long Kazi held him there for that kiss, Kazi reveals that he let go after the first 2 seconds. Stalls, enraged, goes after Kazi, causing Kazi to trip and fall into someone's lunch bowl, ending the comic with the classic, "Waiter, there's a fly in my soup" gag. The end. And then there was some kind of David Letterman top 10 list parody as an epilogue that I don't remember. There. It's done. Woo!
Yay!
Glad to have oxygen now.
So, yeah, remember when I said I was developing this whole world and backstories? This is how deep it went in my head. There are dozens of stories like this that I never wrote down that will remain in my head forever. It's like this TV series existed and I was the only one who ever got to watch it. So, yeah.
Story of my life, dude.
My Christmas story was
so
bad.
So, anybody have any specific comments on the thing I just spewed at you for several minutes?
It sounded like it would be more entertaining than some of the ones that you actually wrote. Or actually drew.
I liked it. I found it very interesting.
I
would have enjoyed it more if you weren't spewing at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, unfortunately that...
No, I preferred it that way.
I remember now... Carrie likes it fast.
Oh! Oh my.
All right. Well, I'll pause for another song break so that we can get to the end stuff for the show because we need to finish as quickly as possible.
He had the shiniest of hair, and he walked into the room with an authoritative air. His carefully shaped eyebrows so severe, you could barely even tell where the prosthetics met his ears. I fell in love with a Spock impersonator, from his ears down to his phaser and his sweet communicator. I thought my search for love was at an end, but being highly logical did not make him a very good boyfriend. When I first saw his furrowed brow, I knew the ideal man had come and found me somehow. I mean, what else could I think when he looked me in the eye and told me prune juice is a warrior's drink? I fell in love with a Worf impersonator, from his forehead to his baldric and his badge communicator. I thought my search for love was at an end, but being strong and angry did not make him a very good boyfriend. Oh, why did I come to this con? This day has been nothing but a roller coaster of emotion. I don't have the time or money to wait in line for Leonard Nimoy, but look over there, what an interesting boy. I fell in love with a Q impersonator, which seemed like a bad idea even 30 minutes later. I thought my search for love was at an end, but he transported me to another dimension and played psychological games with me and my friends.
He must have been a really good Q impersonator.
Yeah, he was.
My name is Nevo. I'm not the chosen one. I always look disheveled while Harry's having fun. Cast a spell on me while I'm drinking tea. It will make me freeze just like a statue. I'm in Gryffindor. I fought Voldemort. From Dumbledore's army at Hogwarts, I helped all the students I could, while Harry just played in the woods. I led the army while he was away. They tortured me every day. My name's Longbottom. But I don't let it bother me. My Patronus is a unicorn. Unicorn. Always get picked on. Still it makes me strong. Learn herbology. And you know what else? Guess what I receive from the sorting hat. Sword of Gryffindor to slay Nagini. The snake was the final Horcrux. The Dark Lord has run out of luck. Harry was able to fight, even though he had just died. The Dark Lord is going to moan, needs resurrection stone. The Death Eaters are so bold. The Malfoys are going home. Yeah!
My name is Neville.
Comments go at the beginning of the show.
Nope. Comics went at the beginning and the middle. And
hey, Lukey, four times if we're done with the teenage comedian portion of the show, I should jet.
Okay.
Well, bye,
Kyle. Thank you very much,
Thanks
Kyle.
For help,
bye,
Kyle.
Oh. Nice to talk to everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Talk to you later. All right.
Okay, I don't need this.
Are the rest of you guys on Skype sticking around?
Comments I need.
Yeah. All
right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So now it's time for...
What's Luke like now? What's at the phone
booth?
What's at the
phone booth? Funny music project.
Floating princess.
Right now at the FUMP, you can download Disney Song by Nuclear Bubble Wrap, a song for Worm Quartet to sing with TV's Kyle by Worm Quartet featuring TV's Kyle, Fun to Fly with the Fat Guy by Robert London Spaff.com, Corned Beef and Cabbage by Power Salad, Hymn for Sin by Dino Mike, Orange Glow by Kobe LaCroix, Moves Like Frogger by Insane Ian featuring the Stacey, and If You Want to Say Fuck by Steve Goody.
Yay!
Hey!
Hi! Lukeski.com store, Be Amused by Me, is available. You can buy it. The Dr. Demento Show, listen to it and make requests for songs like Snoopy the Dog and other songs that aren't Snoopy the Dog, but mainly Snoopy the Dog. Or Christmas tunes or Hanukkah tunes or whatever. DrDemento.com. Art by Lukeski.com. Yeah, I do art, just like I did for Danny and Kim. You can order it through ArtByLukeski.com, and I'm available for parties in the Chicagoland Tri-State area. Hey, Carrie, what shade of pink are you wearing?
I'm wearing purple, and it says Brainy Chick, and it has Hello Kitty. And it's I like it because it makes me feel like myself again, because it's like my cute small t-shirts that I can't wear anymore because they're too small.
Yay! Oh. Okay, quick ignorance story. I did a party out in Richmond, Illinois, and it was a bunch of, like, 13-year-old kids. Talk about hormones. It was like, I was sitting there going, like, wow, I remember when I was this age and obnoxious, like everybody at this party is. I mean, they were fine, and it was a lot of fun. But this one girl was looking through my book of bodies and stuff because she was bored waiting for her turn, and she was like, who is Oogie Boogie? And, who is Roger Rabbit? And... You know, after a few more things like that, that seemed to be, like, something she should know, I just kind of turned to her and I said, were you raised in some kind of pop culture-free bubble or something? You don't know who it's like. And she's like, eh. And it's like, all right, whatever. So I go on. She's looked through the book. And then she actually said this, who is Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Oh.
And even her friends were like, Obi-Wan Kenobi, what is with you? It was like... So I got some.
If it were me, I would have just up and slugged her.
Yeah. So anyway, hey, comments go right damn now.
And there's a shit ton of them, so we're hopefully not going to comment on them.
It's
we're
almost
just
as if
them.
Our last episode was 4 hours and 49 minutes long.
We're trying to beat it.
Slightly D says, Frog Love a Pig. It's longer than the Transformers special.
Yay!
Hey! Wait a minute.
We're commenting on the last show.
Well, technically, if we had done it as its own separate thing without the regular part of the podcast, it would have been just under 4 hours. So the actual Muppet special part was less than, but altogether it was more than.
Yep. Anyway,
Arkle says, the song Insane Ian parody for Moves Like Frogger was done by Maroon 5 featuring Christina Aguilera. Now I am I am an unashamed Maroon 5 fan. I don't care what Todd in the Shadows, my favorite music critic right now, he reviews pop songs for the Nostalgia Critics website.
Yeah, I know.
Says,
I know him.
That said, I loathe Moves Like Jagger. Maroon 5 stuff has never been what one would call deep, but it's been fun stuff. If I Never See Your Face Again, both the album version and the duet with Rihanna, is one of my favorite songs of the past 10 years. But Moves Like Jagger is like a sad, sad joke. It sounds less like a Maroon 5 song and more like what a Maroon 5 haters hears when they think of Maroon 5. I think I just broke the record for number of times Maroon 5 was mentioned on any Lukeski-affiliated website in a single comment.
I've never even heard of Maroon 5 until now. Captain Nova says, Luke... Yes, really. Luke, good rundown of the Muppets. My favorite Weezer music video, Keep Fishin', has Muppets in it. What I like about the Muppets was the attention to details, and some of the songs have something for the kids and adults.
I actually thought it was Moves Like
Shatner. For some reason, you're getting the long comments.
When I first heard it, I thought Shatner. I thought that would have been a better...
Chuck Williams says, such a big chunk of listening, and on one of my favorite subjects, too. I actually made notes on my phone as I listened to things I wanted to comment on, presented here in convenient bullet point form. In the issue of future specials, would it be possible to divide the extra long podcast into chapters? Twice while listening to the Muppet special, I accidentally hit the back instead of pause on my MP3 player and had to do several minutes of fast forwarding to resume where I left off. We already tried doing an episode that was split
with
in half,
two parts,
and we were told that it was not a good thing because it
didn't work.
Because no, it worked, but it meant that if people like Devo Spice, if they go to automatically upload their podcasts, and two of them are posted at the same time on the same day, it only downloads part two instead of part one and part two. So,
or you can set up iTunes to get them all like I do. All
right. Anyway. I hold bad rapport responsible for any loss of face I might have suffered from unconscious dancing to the Banana Boat song or other Muppet music while at the laundromat. Then again, I owe bad rapport along with the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me podcast and various audiobooks big time for making trips to the laundromat much more bearable, so I just might let it slide. I was going to take issue with Luke regarding...
Do you hear that? Some people find this show bearable.
they must be driving long distances.
They don't have to listen.
They
to
must be
day.
Named Bill.
I don't drive as much anymore.
Yay! You'll still listen, though, won't you, Bill?
But it'll take me two trips.
I was going to take issue with Luke regarding being old for having watched the Muppet Show first run back in the day, since we're roughly the same age, but I realized that I just admitted above that I not only listen to NPR, but I download podcasts of their programming, so I'll have to let that one slide as well. I share the love of the monster at the end of the book, and I remember most of the CTW Workshop children's books, be they Muppet Show, Sesame Street, or Electric Company based, all being entertaining, quirky, and yes, even educational without talking down to the target readership. For the record, Baby Kermit on the Muppet Babies cartoon was not, but yet another of the 5011 roles from our childhood cartoon childhood that Frank Welker performed. All hail the Welker. The point is, Frank Welker voiced Baby Kermit, not Dave Coulier, as I had reported last time. Although I'm pretty sure he did at least one voice on that show.
I was going to say, when I was a kid, that monster at the end of the book, I actually was scared for as each page turned. And Grover's trying to psych you up and get you scared for the end of the book. I remember being scared.
I love that book growing up.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually found in recent years that they did make a sequel called Another Monster at the End of the Book.
Really?
Was it Elmo?
Yeah, yeah, and this time...
It was Elmo?
Yeah, it's got Grover, and it's also got Elmo in it.
Okay. Continuing with Chuck Williams' comments, Luke reminiscing about watching Muppet Babies touched a nostalgic chord in my heart. Who remembers when you could groove on an hour of Muppet Babies followed by an hour of Garfield and Friends? Good times, good times. I don't know if TV's Kyle has a list, but if Wikipedia credits Muppet Babies... Wikipedia credits Muppet Babies with inspiring A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, The Flintstone Kids, Baby Felix, Tiny Toon Adventures, Tom and Jerry Kids, and Jungle Cubs... plus baby version merchandise for characters like Snoopy and the Care Bears. I'm almost glad that I have yet to see the Muppets from Space. Now that I know someone that reworked one of my favorite songs from the Muppet movie, I'm going to go back there someday into a near clone of More Than Words. To me, that cover takes all of the heartfelt sincerity out of the original and makes it just another generic ballad. I don't know. I like that remake, personally.
Me too. I hate that original.
I'm so utterly jealous of Luke's Muppet figure collection, but enjoy the discussion of the Palisades Toys line. I recall seeing ads in Toy Fair magazine for a kitchen playset for the Swedish Chef. To your knowledge, was that ever produced before Palisades closed down? Yes, I own it, and Carrie loves it.
It's the best playset ever.
Overall, a very enjoyable special that spoke to my love of most things Muppet. I'm hoping to get a chance to see the new film and confirm the positive response I'm seeing from across the web as Thanksgiving weekend winds down. All right, wild card.
Wildcard says, lots of good memories in this episode. I saw the Frog Prince when it first aired on PBS. Makes me feel old to realize how long ago that was. I never saw the Muppets Today show. It aired when in the Navy, and thus no access to local TV. So almost all of my memories of the Muppets comes from Sesame Street and the Muppet Show, along with the early movies. Surprisingly, I never saw all of the movies. I need to correct this error. And then he corrects his typo, and I'm not going to read that. Computer King.
Computer King says, my favorite color is orange as well, Luke, because it is unique and not common. I don't wear it often because it is not a color to be worn, willy-nilly. It is to be appreciated on the rare occasions when it is worn. Right? Slightly D.
Slightly D says, as far as Muppets go, I've always had an affinity for the weirdos Bert and Gonzo. Gonzo particularly for a scene in Muppet Babies where he wants to build a nuclear reactor and asks Nanny for uranium, a cement mixer, and a paper plate. And he's concerned Nanny might not have a paper plate.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I recall that the Jim Henson Hour had basically the first digitally rendered puppet. It was manipulated with an armature with a rough rendering for the Muppeteer to reference, and then later pasted over with a fully rendered image in post-production. It also spun off the cartoon series Dog City, based upon live Muppet episode of the same title. The villain's catchphrase, senseless violence, became a standard at home whenever we watched a Schwarzenegger or Chuck Norris movie. Thanks for nearly turning me into a blubbering idiot talking about Jim's death, both with Tom's song and with the review of the tribute show. Did you ever get to see the live memorial with Big Bird singing It Isn't Easy Being Green and the Muppeteers singing Just One Person?
Yes.
It's on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah, footage of that is on YouTube.
And finally, Farscape is definitely an acquired taste. You don't need to have seen the whole thing for sci-fi slash Muppet street cred, but you'd probably really enjoy the episode where John is trying to escape from D'Argo during a dream in Looney Tunes form.
D'Argo.
Zorro. Sarah just makes the greatest facial expressions, you guys.
Elizabeth
we
says,
should make a video version of this.
Elizabeth says, I absolutely love this topic. Luke, I had a record, C is for Cookie, and we listen to it all the time. I love the old Frog Prince movie, and I wish I could find it on Netflix at least. Great show, and good luck, Carrie, with the little one. Then I should point out that all of the old Sesame Street albums are on iTunes. You can get them. That's where I was shocked to find this out and very happy. So,
can you get the voice comment ready? It's a short one. Kyle Hudson says, a few thoughts I'd like to share. When I saw the length of this one, I almost skipped it because I didn't particularly enjoy the Transformers episode despite having enjoyed the cartoon in my youth. I think there are two reasons for this. Number one, if you went into the minutiae of Muppets the way you did Transformers, the episode would be 14 hours long. Number two, the music made this one much more enjoyable. Well done.
Lottie frickin' da.
Well,
you just upset a break, Ben Z.
When Luke was saying,
if it makes you feel any better, I didn't listen to either one of them.
When Luke was saying that Jim Henson's death at an early age was, quote, just not fair, the first thought that came to my mind was, it's not fair, but that's the way it is. And then I laughed at myself because that phrase is straight from Labyrinth. And finally, I saw Jim Henson on the Arsenio Hall show. Yes, I actually watched Arsenio Hall with Ralph. It was amazing that even though you saw Jim's lips moving, my brain associated that voice with Ralph, and I would swear Ralph was the one talking. The funniest thing from that, Ralph pointed at somebody in the audience and said, "Son of a bitch!" When Arsenio gave him a surprised look, he said, "No, really, that's one of the nicest things a dog can say to somebody." I also just found out today when looking on Wikipedia that the appearance on Arsenio Hall was Ralph's last public appearance before Henson's untimely demise.
I think clips of that is actually on YouTube as well.
I feel like I've seen that.
It's on YouTube as well if you can find it.
All right, so here is a voice comment from Draconis.
Hey, and Carrie, Luke, I got an idea for one of your Marsh openings one year. If you remember, there was a series in back in the early 80s called Hero High, which was part of Kid Superpower Hour. Why not do like an opening of a high school reunion of them? You could actually be Weatherman since his costume colors were usually bright orange anyway. Have a good show and later.
I've never heard of those.
Hero High?
Hero High.
Never heard of it.
So, that it's surprising, because I usually have heard of things like that, but unfortunately I'm not familiar with that at all. Do you want me to read the thing?
No, we should wrap her up.
All right.
It was a funny translation, though. Thanks, Google Voice.
Yes, thank you very much for calling in with that comment, Draconis. And yeah, you too can leave voicemails for the show at 916-LUKE-SKI. That's 916-585-3754. You can also leave us iTunes reviews.
Yes, we haven't had one since before Alex/Ziggy even existed.
Yes. So you can go to iTunes and do that there. And you can make comments at badrapport.com, BADRAPPORT.com. And, so thank you so much to Mr. TV's Kyle, who has already departed. His website's TV'sKyle.com and
I forgot what they were. There's TV's Kyle's band, TV's Kyle band.com, and then I forgot what the specific URL for his website is. TV's Kyle Arts.com.
Well,
just go to TV.
I think it's TV's Kyle.com, but the Bandcamp one.
Oh, okay.
TV'sKyle.bandcamp.com, and go to Dumb Comics and read his comic book, Frog Raccoon Strawberry.
Yes. So, Sean Ennis, do you have anything you'd like to promote or plug?
No.
Well, thank you so much for being involved with all of this. I'm glad that you got to get the comics once they finally got to you.
And I'm so sorry about the delay that, thanks to my lousy addressing.
it's perfectly all right. Thanks for being on the show. Breakman Z.
Yay.
Promote your advent calendar and whatever else you feel like promoting.
My show on Dementia Radio, Friday nights at 9 p.m. Central. And the advent calendar is at www.youtube.com/BMZAdvent.
Woo! Awesome. Blasted Beal!
Boom!
You're going to be making an appearance in Chicago.
I am!
Yay!
At Doohan Con.
Yay!
Which is more like just hanging out at somebody's house, but
but there's like 95 people there. But I'm going to plant myself next to Beal and Moon.
Yay!
So
You have to fight me for Margot.
I'll fight. I'll bounce her with my big tummy.
Are there things you want to promote?
The new episodes of the Pod of Destiny should be out soon.
Yay! I enjoy the Pod of Destiny.
So I didn't have to continue with any blackmail.
There was one out 2 weeks ago, and none of you commented on it.
I heard it.
I listened to it. And so what's the URL for that?
My comment is that I enjoyed it and I'm pleased that it is out.
Yay! dementiaradio.org/PODOD.
PODOD.
Awesome. And so thank you very much for you all Skyping in. People in the room, hey, it's Jen.
Josh gave up, apparently.
No, Josh has had to do some work.
Ken, do you have things you want to promote?
Not just my show Thursday night. Oh, of course, my most Thursday nights. I won't be doing it this Thursday because I'll be busy on the 15th, but most Thursday nights I do my show, Dementia Radio, 7 p.m. Central.
And Jared Perez.
Yes, I host a show on Dementia Radio as well. It's called It's Monday, But Feels Like a Tuesday, every Monday night at 6 p.m. Central Time. Well, it's not happening this week because I'm here recording this podcast. But yes, also I do, whenever I feel get around to it, the show Dementia SmackDown Wrestling, where all the stars of the Fump and beyond get in the video game and kick the crap out of each
other.
He
does it once a year for MarsCon.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, if Josh were here, what would he want to promote?
CarrieDalby.com.
And Sarah, what do you want to have happen right now?
Nothing! Okay. Absolutely nothing!
Stupid!
You're so stupid!
And on that note, that's the end of episode 54 of Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. I'm Luke.
I'm Carrie.
And everybody else say things right now.
Things right now!
Things up! Stop! Bye.
Kyle!
Oh.
No is a thing.
No. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I reflect on my reflection, and I ask myself the question, what's the right direction to go? I don't know. Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet? If I'm a man, that makes me a Muppet of a man.
A Muppet of a man.
I look into these eyes, and I don't recognize the one I see inside. It's time for me to decide, am I a man?
Am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
I'm a Muppet. Well, I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet? Muppet. Or am I a man?
Am I a man?
If I'm a man, that makes me a Muppet of a man.
A Muppet of a man.
Here I go again. I'm always running out of time. I think I made up my mind. Now I understand who I am.
I'm a man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Flaunting Princess Sing-Along. It is sung in the key of excellence.
It's floating princess time. It's floating princess time. She is floating around. She is not on the ground, for the ground is made of grime. It's floating princess time. It's floating princess time. She is up in the air and she's staying up there, and she's peace 'cause she isn't a mime. She's a wonder to see on the silvery screen in your Saturday matinee. It's sure something to hear how she lacks any fear on her radio show every day. It's floating princess time. It's floating princess time. Do not rest till you've seen she the airborne pre-queen. And her merchandise is so sublime.
Folks, if you're anything like me, you like adventure, surprises, and common household items. Well, if those are the particular sequence of things in which you are interested, then you could do a lot worse than to enjoy the Flaunting Princess. Enjoy her in the movie theater, living room, or enjoy her new gelatin products. I like lime.
She's a bucket of wax, she's a box of thumbtacks. She can clean your stovetop with glee. She's a chimney sweep and she goes well with sheep. She's whatever you want her to be. It's floating princess time. It's floating princess time. She is over your head, she won't leave you for dead. Unless you want her to, if so, then fine.
Check your local listings or ask your stockbroker today.
You're listening to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport.
How about that? After all these years, your big bad high school bully finally apologizes.
Yeah, it kind of rekindles your faith in the basic goodness of people.
You know, it would be nice. What's that? As a symbolic gesture to all the bullies who've tormented us for years, we open our home to Jimmy, and once he's asleep, we kill him. I said it would be nice. I didn't say we should do it.
Leave comments for this episode at badrapport.com or call 916-LUKE-SKI.